Hello, everybody, and welcome to the special Q&A edition of the Weekly Manga Recap for the month of September 2015. I'm our ruler of time here alongside Rillo T. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing very good, Nick. We got very special, important news that I'm pretty excited about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we talked about at the end of last episode how I feel like our show needs a female correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had someone take us up on that.
Someone said, I'll be your female correspondent.
Yes. Her name's Derek, by the way. She noted in it that she's like, despite the email name, I'm a woman. So it could be, you know, her name's Derek, or maybe she's using an account with somebody else who happens to be named Derek. Either way.
Maybe her name is Derek with a Q instead of a CK.
Derek with a Q instead of a C.
Yeah, I don't fucking know how that would make a difference.
I'm like, Derek?
Q, yes. You know, Q is a feminine letter when it appears in names. Don't you know?
Yeah, like you put an apostrophe after it. No vowel, just an apostrophe after it. And you're Derek? Like, Derek. Yeah, it's like French. And then we have a French consultant, too. This is great. But we don't
need one of those. You know, we just pretend and fake.
Yeah, you know? I'm like, hold on. I've got a French question. Let me just go ask Benza. Hello, Chris. It's me, Benzai. I am here on the podcast. And I'm like, Benzai.
You do not know anything about what you're talking about. You are so stupid. Oh, shit, I tripped.
Oh, no. I've eaten the most shit a human being has ever eaten on the bigger carpet. It is a great story. No, but I'm excited, because now, if we ever have a question that only a woman can answer, it's there. Like, just, you know, curious things. This is one of the most important things I think I can have in my life, Nick, beyond also a person who just follows me around like a ghost on my shoulder to instruct me on everything I'm missing in life. Like, someone who's
Hey, listen.
Someone who's just like, you know, you need to buy shoe polish, right? Otherwise, your shoes just get dirty and get destroyed. And I'm like, oh, thank God you're here. But now my other concerns can be answered, because I'm like, what's up with skirts? It just feels like you'd always be cold, you know? That's the important questions. Those are the questions that keep me up at night, Nick.
It's because we live in a society based around patriarchs, and so women's appearance is considered more necessary than their comfort, and thus they have to be put up with such stupid fashion decisions. Ha! You're so smart.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, now I'm just sad.
No wonder you don't have pockets anywhere.
This seems awful. But purses, those seem handy. Do you have to get them every season, or what's up with that? I'm just saying a woman down and talking to her for like an hour and a half about fucking bullshit. She's just like, you're so sad. I'm like, hold on, my ghost on my shoulder is telling me something. Like, you know, a savings account is only useful if you actually put money into it. I'm like, oh! This is so, whoa! I'm learning so much today.
Yeah, the interest rate in a savings account is actually not very high.
So I've discovered, quite brutally.
You should actually take advantage of a 401k if your company offers it.
I'm like, wait, deferred compensation's a good thing?
You mean that if I don't take the money now, it could be worth more later? Well, I mean, you have to put it in the proper savings account. I mean, you can't just, like, leave it on your bedside table.
I can't just...
overnight.
I can't just put $20 in an envelope on my bedstand once a month.
I can't just bury it in the backyard and grow a money tree.
In 5 months, I'm like, hey, how do we have $100 in here? This is bullshit!
I thought that was what pennies were for. No one actually spends them on anything.
It's ridiculous. Oh, where are we? It's Q&A episode, right?
Q&A episode. Actually, one of the things I thought was maybe we could kick off the episode by each of us asking the other a question for us to answer.
Like, impromptu one?
Quick impromptu one.
Okay.
While you're making up yours, I've got a question for you. How do you feel about the Muppet Show starting up?
I love the Muppets. They are one of my most treasured childhood memories.
But I know that you have very strong opinions about new Muppets.
I do. Muppet Christmas Carol is the only tradition I still have in my life in terms of like something I did as a kid that I still do today.
Mm-hmm.
I still watch
that. That's a great movie.
I still watch it every Christmas Eve. It is a fantastic movie. The Muppets meant a lot to me as a kid. And I enjoyed the 2011 Muppets movie. It wasn't bad. And you know what? Muppets Most Wanted, it was mediocre, but that, you know, not bad. A couple okay songs, a little too much Tina Fey. What are you going to do? I have absolutely no desire whatsoever to watch the new Muppet show, and I secretly hope it'll fail. I just, every preview I've seen, I'm just like, you're trying way too hard to modernize the Muppets.
Trying too hard to be relevant when the Muppets feel like they should be sort of timeless type of thing.
Yeah, well, it's like, look, you know, there's Mickey Mouse, like, just one of those fucking characters who's going to always exist. Like, Kermit's always going to be a figure. I'm not saying don't make new Muppet movies, but I'm like, it's just too kitschy. Like, oh, the Muppets are back, but Kermit split up and has a new, hot, sort of Asian, vaguely pig girlfriend. And in response, Miss Piggy's dating Liam Hemsworth. It's like someone took one of my fucking comedy parody pitches from the top 10 sports manga podcast. It was like, let's just make a show out of this. It's, I don't know. It's, I'm not excited for it very much.
I think sometimes it's difficult to be excited about new stuff when you look back and think, oh, you know, there's this classic, you know, like, the first Muppet movie is great. Christmas Carol is great. I know that people have divided opinions on Treasure Island, but I love that movie. And then there's, like, Muppets in Space, which...
It's got Hulk Hogan in it.
Was he in it?
Hulk Hogan. Goldberg's in it. Goldberg's in it. That's right.
I only saw it the one time. Like, and it was just like, wow, there sure is a whole lot of not jokes being told in this.
Yeah, there sure is a lot of Gonzo, which I always thought would be a great thing until you realize he's really only good in small doses.
Well, yeah, you know, it's great if he's around. It's actually even fine if he's around all the time, if he's just not the focus all the time. Like, his role actually, his role in The Christmas Carol, great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's there throughout the whole thing, but then he pulls back and lets other stuff happen. Treasure Island, you know, also great because they're there all the time, but they're the sidekicks who only show up, you know, occasionally, and they just, you know, crack some one-liners and that's it. Gonzo, you know, oh, he's going to discover his family and his home world, and is that, but is he offering wacky commentary? Well, not really.
He's crying a lot, like, oh, this doesn't, I don't know if I want to see this. And that's what I'm hearing the new Muppet show is, so no, I have very little desire to see it.
I totally understand you.
Nick, are you excited for the new Bond movie?
I really like Daniel Craig as Bond, so yeah. I will definitely look forward to seeing that movie. I mean, he is
Idris Elba as James Bond, what say you?
I think that he would be fine. Okay. I am really super stoked to share this with you. I recently started watching The Wire finally.
Oh my god, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, I'm only like 4 episodes deep right now. I'm more intrigued than anything so far. I think that some of the characters are really cool, but I haven't had that moment yet where it's just like, it is great or anything.
I
like a lot of the conversations that they have. I was very happy when I got to the first chess explanation that Dean gives.
And you're just also sitting there like...
I was so
like
disappointed when the knight thing didn't come up.
Yeah, you're just like, because there's no way to make that analogy, so it's really just like, pink, what horse piece?
So disappointed that that didn't actually happen. I was like, did Chris just make this up? Did he lie to me?
if that's the case, we'll have to do a Wire podcast sometime. If
I get super into it, we may have to.
Let's stop the podcast now and talk about your 4 experience episode with.
I've only got 4 episodes to talk about. It was like, there's that one guy who died. How do you like Idris Elba? He's cool, but he's been in like 5 scenes so far.
I'm like, Nick, how do you feel about Carver? You're like, what a big pile of shit.
Which one is Carver?
he's the black cop of the Gruber cop patrol, the two-man tag team with Herc and Carver.
There's 3 black cops in that group, though.
I'm referring to the 2 Goober cops, the ones who hang about and are always constant fuck-ups.
He's all right. I mean, his fellow Goober cop is way more memorable because he's way more of a goober.
And this is super off topic. People are like, I came here for manga questions. We're talking about the wire, but it is always one of my most amusing thoughts that the second episode, they're like, oh, someone's got to go down to the heights, I think they call it. And
fuck shit up
reason. Yeah, and you're like, we got a little problem there. And you're like, oh, we sent the biggest goober squad of Herc, Carver, and Presbo.
they didn't send them. They just, like, the three of them were just like, let's go there and fuck stuff up because they're all idiots.
You just, it's like the three characters who are the biggest nudniks in the squad. You're like, oh, and they're coming to handle the most volatile situation happening at the moment.
Fucking no one's there. It's just a couple of poor people.
You're like, oh, dear.
I do like the whole point of the show, though, which is like, you know, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys, but shades of gray everywhere within them.
Oh, so many brilliant scenes. Well, I'll wait until you get much further.
To get back to the original question you asked me, I love Daniel Craig as Bond. I think that Idris Elba would be a great Bond.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yes, looking forward to the next movie. Not super looking forward to it, because I don't actually go to the movies very much anymore, but I will see it eventually. So, yeah. And also Idris Elba is a really good actor.
So. He is. He's exceptional. You'll get to become like me, where every time you see a Wire actor, you're like, good for you.
You went on to do great things in the past 13 years.
I'm like, oh, another Wire character who's been killed off in The Walking Dead already. Great. Yeah, they don't last long. Anyway. Spoilers.
All right, let's actually get into this now. We've got a lot of questions to get through.
Yes.
So, we've got a few, I guess, from Tropical Blitz to start off.
Yes. Now, are we alternating this again?
Might as well. Okay. I could read both of these that we got from Tropical Blitz first, and then we can move on and alternate over to you.
Sure.
All right. There's also some suggestions in here. I'll just read the questions, though. Number one, with Nisekoi wrapping up in this coming year, what do you guys think will happen from now on? What do you hope to see more out of the series at this point? I expect that there is going to be something kind of dramatic happening with all of the major love interests. I mean, I think that we had that whole thing with Chitoge. We've gotten this whole thing going on right now with Marika. I'm sure that Tsugumi will probably get a little bit more. And then we'll have something with Onodera.
What could possibly happen to Onodera?
Yeah, well, I think we joked about this in a previous episode, where it was just like a candy shop's being bought or some shit.
Yeah, she's moving as well.
I really hope it's not a rehash of they might have to move away, and so they're forced to actually talk about the situation instead of murdered her.
I hope it's something absurd, like, oh, we sold a bad cake, and now a hitman has put an assassination out on my daughter, and we need to move her away into Secret Service.
So Tsugumi gets to have another badass fight?
Yeah, there's another fight in there, obviously. And just, like, they have to dodge an assassin hitman going after her.
I hope to see more out of the series? I don't really know, honestly. I would like there to continue to be more kind of different stuff go on. Like the very unexpected, nearly a full chapter long fight scene that Tsugumi got. And not necessarily like, oh, I want more action out of it, but I would like, you know, more unexpected stuff as opposed to rehashing the same, they might have to move away. No, they don't, storyline, which has happened 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like more surprises to happen. I guess if I really want to put my fanboy hat on, I will say, like, I don't want Raku to end up with Tsugumi, which is never going to happen. He's going to end up with Chitoge, yes. Most likely with no one.
I was about to say, the only thing I hope out of it is closure. That's the only thing I really want out of it. I've never had really necessarily a problem with Nisekoi. It's just one of those series where you're like, I need it to end before I can really, like, sit there and enjoy it, you know?
And, you know, it's the big, you know, romantic harem comedy that Shonen Jump has right now. It's probably gonna close fairly soon. I don't know. People go around and it's like, it's gonna be ending soon, and I haven't actually bothered to see
any... I don't expect it to end this year or anything like that.
I don't think it can last much longer.
But yeah, I don't see it. I would say probably by this time next year it ends, but I wouldn't be surprised if like it goes until like May or June of next year.
I strongly believe it is closer to finishing than Bleach, Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
All those ones that are allegedly in their final arc. It seems like it will last less time than them. But yeah. Next one is, are you guys still planning on reviewing the last Naruto the movie? It's I hate that title, by the way.
The last Naruto movie?
Which it's not the last Naruto movie, even. it's confusing because the last does not refer to the movie. It refers to a character. So, yeah. And also, are you planning on seeing the Boruto film in October? I'm not sure about that second one, because it's difficult to see anime movies in my area. There's, like, one theater near me that will show them, and you gotta, like, get reservation for it and stuff, and I don't know if I'm gonna go through all the hassle of doing that. I'll make an effort, but no promises on that. As for Naruto, the last, yes, we are still planning on reviewing that one.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think I'll be seeing Boruto, though. Same issue, situation with you, where there's not really theaters that play anime movies around here. I've only actually ever seen one anime movie in theaters, and I saw the live-action Death Note with my sister.
Oh.
I had given her the volumes of it, my collected volumes, and she enjoyed it, so I was like, oh, hey, let's go see it, you know, kind of like a bonding thing. Yeah. So we went to the theater. It was like an hour out of our way, but we got there, and we were one of the first people. It was a very strange experience, because I gave my sister Death Note on the notion of, like, she's not an anime or anything like that, but this is just a good story, and I think she'll appreciate it. So she did right. In that regard.
That was a gateway for this, a lot of people to check out anime.
Yes, and this was her seeing the side of anime that just made me look like the biggest loser on the planet, because that's where she met cosplay, like, the people dressed up, and then there were people asking that person for autographs, and my sister's like, they're not the fucking character from the show, why are they getting their autograph? And I was just like, let's just watch the movie quietly, and then people are cheering whenever their character shows up on screen, and I'm just like, it's not all like this. I don't know why I was so embarrassed by it. I'm like, there's nothing, like, in this situation right here, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, you're at a movie to enjoy yourself, but in that moment, I was just like, oh god, I look like a big loser in front of my sister.
Well, that was several years ago. You would have been, like, what, a teenager, I think, at that time?
Not quite a teenager. I think I was a little, maybe, like, 19, 20. So okay. around that
but even
age,
even but. So, around that time, I remember feeling kind of, like, vulnerable about my fandoms and stuff like that. Oh, in the last several years, I've grown much more self-assured, and I'm just like, yeah, there's some crazy fans about everything. Mm-hmm. And you will find them all in the... You'll find them here, basically. There are greater concentrations of them in America, because that's the only ones who will know about this stuff, because it's harder to find here, so...
It was just very amusing to me, like, you know, now looking back on it, to see, like, oh, this is my sister being initiated, like, just thrown into the pool of anime
nerds. That's going right into the deep end. She didn't have, like, you know, get into Toonami as a kid and then slowly...
No, it wasn't,
growing to expect that behavior, just like, this is what anime is. This is what happens when you watch it ever.
This is a guy dressed up as L, and everyone, like, a bunch of women are crying and asking for his autograph. His sister's like, he's not the actor. He's not even the character.
I was confused when I... There are some cons that I've attended where that goes on, where, like, they're really cosplay heavy, and it's just, like, there are people who are cosplaying and hosting, you know, panels and stuff like that, and they're doing the whole thing in character, and it's like, I don't really understand the appeal of this, honestly. I will not judge you for doing this, but I really don't understand it.
So. I can absolutely get cosplay as, like, oh, this is a way for me to express myself, like, I love these characters and I want to portray that, and, like, I can understand the idea of, like, oh, I like what cosplayers, you know, particular cosplayers, so I'll get their autograph. I can never comprehend the idea of, like, you're dressed as Captain America and I love Captain America. Can you sign this as Captain America?
Right.
That I'd just be like, well, no, I just feel like I'm delusing myself.
It would have to basically be Chris Pratt or, you know, someone who has voice acted Captain
Chris
America.
Chris Evans, yeah. Well, I mean, look,
Not Chris Pratt. There's three Chrises in those movies, okay?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of...
Hemsworth, Pratt, and Evans.
There's a lot of hot Chrises in the Marvel Universe. My dream one day is to be the fourth in their pantheon.
Actually, that's a pretty goddamn ambitious.
I'm like, Nick, just wait. 2019, Chris Larios as Black Bolt.
Who do you think the dreamiest Chris is?
Oh, of those three, it's Evans. Oh, he gets...
I'm torn.
Oh, actually...
I am torn between him and Hemsworth, honestly.
And Hemsworth is...
Hemsworth's got the wonderful flowing hair.
He does. There was a moment...
He's got the, you know, foreign straw man thing. So.
I was watching Thor with my ex-girlfriend back in the day, and like, in the process of watching it, like, when Thor has, like, I don't know if he's shirtless in it, but, like, there's a moment where he's just very hunky.
He exposes,
and she's just good. Like, she's just like, I'm sorry, for a moment I forgot you even existed. I was like, Chris, who? I was like, it's okay. I understand.
He does expose the guns a fair amount in those movies. Anyway.
There's that scene in fucking Age of Ultron, which is like, here's Chris Edwards, barely contained in this shirt, chopping wood. I'm like, you might as well have just put him in, like, a tissue or something. Why even play the facade of wearing a shirt?
How the fuck did we get to this after talking about Boruto the movie?
I don't know, but I'm very happy.
Question three. Do you agree with the New York court law that a burrito is in fact a sandwich? Does that also make hot dog sandwiches? Burgers? Ice cream cakes?
A burrito is a sandwich?
Apparently there is a New York court law that a burrito is a sandwich.
I mean, I guess for the legal purposes, I guess you need to quantify it under something, but...
I think that most restaurants would say, you know, like, sandwich slash wrap in order to qualify that. I can understand, yo, oh, it is filling surrounded by a bread.
Hmm.
So, you know, from that, I can also get behind, you know, it's like, oh, you know, hot dog, sure. Burger, definitely. Ice cream cake? Well, in my experience, an ice cream cake is actually a cake with layers of ice cream in it. But I assume they mean, like, those kind of ice cream cookie things. I don't know what you would call them, aside from ice cream cakes. I don't know. I don't eat them. They always have chocolate. I don't like chocolate. But that's also technically like ice cream within two, you know, pieces of quote-unquote bread. So I understand that. And in fact, I believe they're called ice cream sandwiches. So there you go.
So then, by this process, is a pie then a sandwich?
Ooh. No.
Okay.
Because...
pies are closed. There's nothing...
All right, if it's like a turnover, you know, sized pie, then yes. Oh, God.
We have no time for any other questions this week. We just, like, spent an hour and a half debating sandwiches.
This is tough, because then you're also saying, like fucking pizza bites would be sandwiches then under that definition, too. And I don't think that... Ah, it's hard.
I think, for legal purposes, calling them a sandwich is fine. If you ask me... Like, if I ask you what your favorite sandwich is, though, and you say burrito, I smack you. I feel like that's the letter of the law I lay down.
Okay. If it's a meal that is food contained within bread, then I guess you could argue it's a sandwich. I would not personally call a burrito a sandwich. I would say it more better qualifies as a wrap. If you want to say all wraps are sandwiches, then I think you're crazy, but sure.
Yeah.
Then if you extend it to desserts and such, it no longer is a main meal, it is a dessert. And so that goes under its own category. So
that, it's not bread generally, it's a pastry, which is different.
And then you're going to say, like, well, what about chicken pot pies, Nick? And I'll say, shut the fuck up.
You're like, ew, those are disgusting.
Oh, no, I love chicken pot pies. It's just like, shut up. And now you're just saying pies or sandwiches again. So shut up. And that also means that those pork buns are sandwiches, too.
Oh.
That's also weird to me.
It's a great question, Tropical.
Oh, we're God. Saying. We could have had an entire freaking podcast about this. What is a sandwich?
I know. I'm like trying to like kill the conversation fully because I'm like, if we stay on this, we're going to be on this for like 3 hours.
Let's see here. Question again about Soma and his fight with Kuga. I think that Soma utilizing his observation skill alongside him going to the fringes of the greater Chinese cuisine to face one of the core cuisines, Sichuan in this case, was really great since it highlights why there's so much more to Chinese than many people give him credit for. Now that Soma's brought on his third dish, something caught my attention. This was another Taiwanese dish, which is without a doubt a Chinese dish by extension, but the politics of the areas where these dishes came from makes it more interesting to consider, especially with Kuga following a very traditional Chinese cuisine. So my question is, do you think that there is some subtext that the author placed in there in regards to how he views the China-Taiwan situation? No. That is an interesting theory. I don't think that had anything to do with it, though.
It's very much like the question Oda got. Like, with the Skypiea thing, an allegory to this enormous situation of these ancient Indian tribes being killed? Like, no, I just made people in the sky with tribal clothing.
I think that it was literally like China and Taiwan have some, you know, similar cultural roots. So there are similar roots in their cuisines and stuff, but there are strong differences between them. And so they probably went to their consultants, because there is a cuisine consultant for the manga series, and we're just like, what is a, you know, dish with Chinese roots, but that is very different from super traditional Chinese cuisine? And that was the only motivation behind it.
Agreed. But good insight.
Interesting idea. I mean, Sokeki no Soma has proven in the past that there is more to food than meets the eye, and it is a very deep subject. So, yeah.
Now I'm thinking about transforming sandwiches. And I'm like, does that still count? Like, it's a transforming pie. Is that a sandwich? Because it can open up now.
Well, there's open-faced sandwiches.
That's true. Glad we solved that. Glad we nipped that one in the butt early.
All right, next question.
All right. This is from Matt McQueenie. He gives us some awesome praise, asks if we would read the Phoenix Wright manga based off the game after seeing all our enjoyment of Gakkyo Hotei. It's one that gets there, though I don't know how easy that one is to get anymore. I know it kind of had like a little, not like a limited run, but I don't see it often when I go to bookstores, and I don't know if it's ever something that, I don't think it's like been released digitally or anything like that, so I'm not sure that one's as easy to get, but it's always an option.
And I always, and I personally hate doing manga based on games or anything.
Which is a question that's going to come up like 3 times tonight, I think. But also, he has a challenge to each of us. To you, Nick, he challenges you to a duel of Yu-Gi-Oh! And he's been itching to issue this challenge ever since he heard about the duel, and he wants to see how much Yu-Gi-Oh! Potential you've got.
Well, it depends on how we're going to do it. I mean, if we're going to do it in like one of the online thingies or whatever, then there's a whole fuck ton of stuff I have to catch up on. Because I haven't really been following the game very closely lately. Mm-hmm. I have a deck that's not very good. That's just kind of sitting next to me over here. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
True that. And then he has a question for me. He says, you claim to be a One Piece fanboy, but how can you say that when you don't have a fanfic of that? I challenge to write one of those to the level of your previous ones. Your pick on who to write about. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I essentially, not only have I written a fanfic, I've essentially created an entire universe fanfic, because I created a One Piece role-playing form that is essentially one giant fanfic of One Piece, just without original characters.
And it's, you know, a collaborative fanfiction, we'll say.
Yes.
That's the thing that I think that people need to understand about, like fan online role-playing and stuff, is it is basically fanfiction.
Yeah.
You're making a story. And especially if, you know, it's like online and it's in text format, you're writing it, so it's a fanfic.
Mm-hmm. That's how I would view it. It's, I don't use any of the characters for One Piece necessarily, but I use the concepts of the world, the tone, all that stuff. It's all in there. So I have an obscene amount of One Piece fanfic under that knowledge, not only that I've been doing recently, but I've been doing for on and off for, I think, the past 7 years or so. So the challenge is back on you, buddy. Now you have to read all of my One Piece fanfiction writing, which no one will do because that's an absurd amount. Next question, Nick.
All right, this comes from Eric Wilkinson. Why? Do you think you'll make any more red right to left? Because I never get asked that question. If I feel like doing it, I'll do it. That's all you need to know. Do you guys still have... What?
No, I just said boom. Like, hammer drop.
Do you guys still have / plan to have a football podcast? I never watched football, but I enjoyed listening to Botch Snap and your other old podcast. Made people think I knew things. Well, if you used us as a source of information, I'm sorry.
You also were probably very biased for the Bucks and Giants for some reason, even though they didn't have a good season.
And Lions. And Lions.
Even though none of those teams had a good season that year.
No, we were all sad by the end of it. If we feel like doing it, we'll do it again. We currently don't have plans to do it, but maybe. You never know. No. Third question. If Donald Trump were a One Piece character, who would he be? Or if he were himself, what would his power be? I think that you are asking the wrong question here, which is to ask if Donald Trump is a One Piece character, because I believe that he is already. Have you seen him and heard him? That he seems like something Oda would make up, doesn't he? He is so ridiculous.
I mean, with more casual racism than One Piece characters tend to have, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
It's weird. He's like a combination of two things to me. On one hand, he's a little bit like a celestial dragon, where he's rich, pompous, shitty to people, and an asshole. But at the same time, he's trying to be charismatic and, like, appeal to an everyman. Like a celestial dragon's just pompous, you know? That's like a guy who's just like, oh, well, I'm better than all of you people. But Donald Trump almost tries to appeal like, nah, I'm like a guy who'd be at a bar hanging out with you. So he's a little bit of a celestial dragon and a little bit of, like, a Buggy the Clown, where you're like, you're a goober and a jerk at the same time. So, a little bit of both, I think. And the pre-Impel Down Buggy, by the way, you know, before it became kind of friendly and admirable. This was when everyone still thought he was a joke.
Right. Can you think of an otherwise good series ruined or hurt severely by one glaring aspect, either a plot element or a moment? There's many of them that you could name, I think. Prince of Tennis is kind of ruined by having Jacinda as his main character, for example. I've mentioned multiple times, because I've talked about that series so much, that there were much more interesting characters, and the series would have probably been better if they focused on them instead of Etchison, because he was a pompous guy who never faced an actual challenge and never lost. It's not very fun. Ruined or hurt severely? Well, I mean, like, we also talked about how Ice Shield 21's final arc was really disappointing, about, like, everything, basically, from when they face the Teikoku Alexanders afterward. Mm-hmm. Not very good.
I'll go with one we don't mention exactly, but I almost feel like if you... I mean, you couldn't stop it there because there's too much plot going on, but if you basically change Toriko post the fight with Ichiru and Midora... Or is it Midora? The tongue guy.
It was Midora.
Midora. If you basically change everything after that fight, I feel like, well, like, it's so weird to me that I'm like 3 years ago, it was my number one manga of that year. And now I'm like, I cannot wait for this thing to end so I can stop reading it. I feel like something like that. I mean, you're almost like saying, like, oh, you want to retcon the past 2 years of a series, but
it's a moment.
Yeah, I'm like, it's kind of, yeah. It's a moment of long yawning, essentially, but... Yeah, oh, that's one that came to mind. I'm trying to think of, like, a series that was otherwise ruined by, like, one moment. I mean, Usagi Drop, if you cut out, like, the very end of it, it's, you know, a fine series. Yeah, I guess those would be the ones to go with.
All right,
next question. Or next email, rather.
Yes.
This is from Jordan Glazer. He has a couple questions here. First, you've brought up many times your dislike for the Ice Shield 21 anime because of how it displays plays and actions as superpowers. Do you have any other examples of when a manga did something better than the anime, or the inverse, when an anime did something better than the manga?
I haven't really had too many... Here's the thing. There aren't a lot of series where I'll read the manga and watch the anime. I mean, it'll just be a matter of, like, I'll, you know, read it, and then I'll have experienced the story, and I won't feel like I need to watch it. Or I'll watch the anime, and then I've experienced the story, and I don't feel like I'll need to read the manga. There are very few examples where this happens, where I'll do both. I've done it with Bleach. Bleach sometimes adds too much padding, but sometimes they improve fight scenes that are very lacking because Kubo is obsessed with giant panels where nothing happens. And, you know, the anime has to find better pacing around that. You know, they very much run into the Dragon Ball Z problem. There are times when it's better and there are times when it's worse. And the Bleach anime actually a couple of times managed to put together filler that was surprisingly good. And other times it was terrible. But, you know, occasionally it was good, you know.
Yeah.
That's something, saying something. Ice Shield 21 I mentioned, yeah. I actually think that the Prince of Tennis anime is better than the manga. I think I've mentioned that as well. There are some things that they did that were incredibly goofy. For example, there was one filler team that they faced where a tag team featured a guy who would vault off the back of the other guy in order to jump really high in order to do a smash, which is...
So how did the tennis ball get that high that he needs to get that much air for it?
Yeah. And also, also, that's illegal. You can't boost your partner. I mean, they did the same thing, though, in iShow 21, and it was way stupider then. Literally, like, it was like a four-team international tournament. And first of all, they made the one African team.
Oh, no.
All be black, you know, just all identical black guys.
Like, all tribal. They're like, we're the African Panthers.
It was just like they were all really tall with long limbs, and they were identical because their mascot was a zebra. See, so they all kind of blended together. But it's like, why did you do this with the black people? All black people look alike. But then there was the Russian team, and they had a super awesome defense because one of their players was super powerful and strong. And then he had a younger brother who would vault off of his back in order to do this like missile diving tackle against the ball carrier. And it's like, first of all, you're not allowed to vault off your teammate in football. That's illegal. Second of all, why would you ever do this?
It seems so time-consuming and then much more dangerous.
Oh, you want to talk about time-consuming? There was also a play in that game where, literally, here is what happens.
Okay.
So, the Haha Brothers, you know, Jumanji and Kuroki and...
Takuno? Takuno?
It's something like that. It's very close to that. I don't know if we've gotten it right. Anyway, so they run up the field in order to face this giant Russian defender guy, and they basically do their three-on-one technique in order to get rid of him. So, you know, to clarify, they've sent three linemen down the field as lead blockers for Senna. Mm-hmm. So they get rid of this guy, and then his, like, I think his little brother comes in to attack him and tackle him. But then Senna reveals he's not actually carrying the football. It's all a fake play. A fake play designed to set up for a field goal.
What?
They sent three lead blockers and their ace running back down the field and gained something like 30 yards so that Hiruba could have presumably 20 seconds to hold the ball in place.
What
was Musashi the point of the field goal?
You can kick it 60 yards. How far away from the end zone?
Well, this is just, you know, further evidence for my theory that the people who made the anime had no fucking clue how football actually works. And so when they deviate at all from how Inagaki and Murata, you know, wrote stuff out and, you know, designed games and stuff, if they deviate from that at all, then everything was just a train wreck and it was stupid.
I like the idea that Haruma, the, like, devious mastermind he is just saying, like, we tricked you into running all the way downfield so that we could score 3 points and give you the ball!
It was like, even if Senna got fucking tackle there, he would have gained a first down. You didn't need to do this!
All you did was endanger the rest of your team by limiting the blockers you have to defend the fucking snap. How did no one on the other side of the line's like, hey, they still have the ball over here. Like, let's just charge them.
Karita just, like, sits on them. So, yeah. God, I should tell you when anime sucks. I'm sorry, I know that your question was, what other examples do you have?
I have more examples of the iShield 21 manga.
Anime adaptations are weird, though. For example, the Naruto anime tends to emphasize their mixture of old culture, but with new technology a lot more. There are scenes where they have, like, you know, fucking VHS players and stuff. The last movie, spoilers for when we eventually check it out, features a giant lightning cannon. It's super weird. I don't think that necessarily makes it better or worse. But the Naruto anime also has some fucking kick-ass music, so I think that can improve it in some capacity.
Azik's the big one.
It is very much like, you know, yeah, you know, I'm not really, you know, offering tremendous insight here, but there are examples where additions get much better and examples where a lot of stuff is lost in translation. So yes.
Second question: do you guys ever read the author comments at the back of Weekly Shonen Jump? Generally, yes. They're not absurdly amusing because a lot of time they're talking about stuff that's, you know, much more relevant in Japan. Like, it's rare that you get something from Oda that isn't about like, oh, I met this Japanese celebrity today. They were awesome. Or, you know, like, oh, I'm sick today. Oh, damn this Kikata season. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, you know, fair enough. You don't often get ones that are just like, I fucking hate Naruto or something like that. Like, from Kubo, where you're like, whoa! Nah, there's some interesting ones from here.
Eventually you'll find it was just like, I've been listening to some freaking American podcast that think I'm not good at art. Fuck them.
Fuck those assholes. These American dickheads. And suddenly the next character in fucking Bleach is like, oh, it's Nicholas Olivan Lariosovan, and it's just some big fat nerd who gets like impaled with a sword through a wall by the fucking Umbrella Girl from the start of the arc. There! She's back! And she killed you! Happy now? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am, actually.
Yeah. I got to be in a manga. Yay!
She did something, finally.
Oh, someone is actually asking about the Death Note anime ending difference. The Death Note anime is surprisingly way more sympathetic towards Light, which, yeah, it's kind of a dumb decision.
Oh, isn't it? He actually gets to see Ryuk before he dies and, like, have, like, a touching send-off?
Well, like,
as opposed to the manga where Ryuk's like, sucks to be you!
Talked about this in an old video I did where it was about satisfying villain deaths, where mm-hmm. basically in the anime it's like he gets found out, he gets shot the fuck up, and then with multiple gun wounds, he gets up and escapes from the warehouse they're in, runs down the pier or something like that, and then eventually collapses on some stairs, and Ryuka's just like, well, time to kill you, Light, and he writes his name down, that's it.
Whereas oh, it's almost like a mercy killing, right?
Yeah, whereas in the manga, Light has been shot up, and he realizes his have options, and then he sees Ryuk, and he's like, oh, Ryuk, you can write their names down and save me! And Ryuk's like, yeah, okay, I'll write the names down, and he turns the Death Note around, he's written Light's name, and Light's like, why? And he's like, I told you, I was never your friend. And basically, the only reason, you know, you've stopped being interesting to me, so now's the time for you to go. And I told you that I would do this as soon as you stopped being interesting, and now you're begging me for help, so fuck off. And then he dies. And it's just like, ha, 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 fuck you, White.
And then last question from Jordan. He says, Chris, do you still read Seven Deadly Sins? Is it good? I recently picked up the first volume and enjoy it, but I'm apprehensive to invest anymore because it sounded like it was really starting to drag when you stopped reading it. I have not read it in a couple months. Basically, once we stopped recapping it is when I stopped. I've heard mixed things on how it's been proceeding from there. I would say that it had some bright spots and had some enjoying bits here and there, but your ability to enjoy it in the long term is going to, from what I've seen, depend heavily on how you tolerate power levels in a manga. So if the very idea of essentially quantifying a character's worth is something that does not interest you or turns you off, then I'll tell you, you could probably save your money. But otherwise, it seems like a relatively fun series, but I have not read it myself to give you a first-hand perspective.
All right, next we have a question from Maximilian Windmeyer. I'm apologizing if I got that wrong. First of all, thank you guys for all the laughs through the years, and a special thank you to you, Chris, for inspiring me to get off my ass and lose some weight. You're a great inspiration, man.
Well, good job to you, sir.
Yeah, keep it up. Questions. If you both got stands, as in JoJo, what would be your co-host's stand name and ability?
Oh, so we pick it for each other, then.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I read this question before, so I had a little time to think about this one.
All right, I'm gonna have to think of something.
So I came into this with a couple ideas. One, I think Nick is in the scope of JoJo. You'd be one of those characters who seems like you have like okay, it seems like an okay ability, but I don't know how it compete with some of the top tier ones. But you're very smart, and I feel like you could use it in a very inventive way. So I came up with the power, and I also, thinking about how we mentioned the other week about the elements, like what you think of, you see yourself as fire.
Right.
I gave you the ability, you have a stand. Anything it punches, you superheat. It can't ignite it, but it can essentially just, you know, put it to a basically boiling temperature or something like that, depending on the atom. So you can use it in interesting ways. Like, you can boil water, you could punch steel to make it expand because it gets that big. And some things would ignite just from the fact they get that hot, they ignite themselves. But you had very interesting ways to go about it. And I thought, what would be a good name for that then? And my first thought was Arcade Fire, because it fits with that. But I don't think Nick likes Arcade Fire, so I gave you Kill...
I have no opinion on them.
I gave you Kill Switch Engage instead. Because it's a really fucking metal-sounding name, and I feel like you've got a pretty metal fucking stand. Because even, like, you're like, oh, okay, you know, it heats things up, you know, I could do some inventive things. You can also just punch people a bunch of times and make them super hot and they burn to death. So, you know, that's pretty cool, too.
Now, to clarify, because I'm not nearly as familiar with JoJo as you. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about it. The stand names tend to come from, rock and roll groups. Like,
yeah, it tends to be more rock and roll. It's alternated a bit. There's some, you know, like Earth, Wind, and Fire was one, and, you know, things like that. It's got more modern as time goes on. There was also a couple that are, like, Italian fucking fashion brands and shit like that. But generally music or bands or song lyrics sometimes.
Okay. Now, keep in mind, I only had, like, a minute to think of this.
Okay.
So I actually came up with the title and then the ability based on that. But I'm going to tell you the ability first.
Okay.
So your ability would be... your stand ability would be that you, wherever you punch, you can alter the age of it. Mm. So, in addition to, you know, causing, you know, someone to become an old man or revert to a baby or whatever, you could also, you know, rust metal or cause plant to grow really quickly or, you know, shrivel it up or whatever. The ability's name would be Baby Metal.
Baby Metal?
Have you never heard of Baby Metal?
I mean, I've heard of Baby Metal, the genre. I've never heard... Is there a band called Baby Metal?
It's basically just, like, this group of three teen pop idols that...
Oh, is this the one where it's, like, two Japanese girls and, like, a fucking, like, giant, like, metalhead Viking dude, and they all wear, like, the same magical girl outfits?
Not quite. Oh, okay. It's these three girls. One's a bit older than the other two, and they wear, like, black, you know... idol clothing, and they sing about generally cutesy things. Occasionally they get a bit darker, and they have these guys in, like, white and black face paints, usually skeletal themed, and they're playing fucking metal behind them.
I'm trying to think. Okay, Baby Metal, I'm looking them up now. Not bad looking girls. Good for, yeah. I could dig that. It's Kabuki Matt. Wait, hold on, how old are they?
I think the oldest is 17.
Alright, I take back what I said because it's creepy otherwise. I was looking at a picture that was very small and had all my glasses on. That's my justification.
Okay.
Because I clicked it up, was like, that girl looks like she's 11. I'm trying to remember.
Well, they've been doing it for a couple of years, and so the younger ones seem to have... I mean, the younger ones are obviously a lot, you know, more mature than they were, because I think they started when they were, like, 13, and now they're, like, 16, so...
Okay. I need to find the name of the fucking... the band that I'm thinking of. Because there's one I saw, it got linked to me.
You can witness Nami-san grow into the beautiful
world. Yeah.
God, what a creepy comment.
But there is a metal band that's like two Japanese girls, and then it's like some fucking like 6'5" Norwegian dude. And they sing, like, Japanese, like, the two, like, Japanese girls sing, like, the pop song, like, cutesy stuff, and then he comes in with just a metal version of it, but he's just, and they're in, like, these pop girl outfits, and then he's just wearing all the same ones, but, like, you know, just ill-fitting for him with these giant hairy legs and, like, thigh-high stockings. It's funny as shit. Baby Metal. All right, I can dig that. Cool power.
I confess that I am super into them. I think that their music is hella catchy, so.
Did you just say hella?
Yeah.
Alright.
Might as well.
I'm keeping it in mind.
Also, they did a fucking collab with, like, fucking Dragon Force. It was so weird.
Not really, when I think about it. I'm like,
well,
that
yeah,
seems
when
like...
you think about, like, of all the metal bands that could be that are popular over here, yeah.
Dragon I'm like, Force, well, Dragon Force seems pretty nerdy.
Band, so.
I'm like, Dragon Force also seems pretty nerdy, so I'm not surprised.
They are.
They sing a lot about wizards fighting dragons.
And swords and shit, yeah.
Next question we got here. Next one.
Oh no, my coolness meter has been reduced.
I know, with their manga podcast Q&A. A question here from Brawla. She says, what do we think, or how do we think the big three, quote unquote, will influence the next generation of manga? Essentially saying, what do we think, you know, Dragon Ball...
Oh, we have another question from Maximilian, too.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
we'll go back to it.
Okay. Well, she said, you know, how Dragon Ball had a big impact on so many series that came after that. Do we think that other series will be, you know, heavily inspired by Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, Attack on Titan? Do we expect certain tropes, like the black-haired rival, to be more used more often than usual? Black Clover seems to take a lot of influence from it. You know, how do we think the big series from current, or the ones that have just ended, will influence the next generation of manga?
I have no clue. I think we're going to have to wait and see. I have no idea how to predict that.
All I would say is I feel One Piece has already put its stamp in inspiring a lot of series. It's just that I feel that friendship between family or people who aren't, family with one another has become a larger sort of trope in series. You know, you'll point to Fairy Tail as the number one, but it's something that's becoming more and more emphasized, I feel like, outside of that. But even then, it's tough to tell because these series aren't over yet. So I think maybe the most you'll see is maybe inspiration art styles might come up. So. Yeah.
And maybe, because we've seen a bit of this from One Piece, but especially in Naruto, maybe there will be a bit of like a... Maybe you'll see a lot of series with the theme of, you know, passing stuff on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, like, Dragon Ball was... sort of became a tale of, like, growing up in a way, because we saw Goku go from a kid into a teenager into an adult, but he never went away,
yeah.
Like, even when it looked like, okay, now Gohan's the hero, it's like, we're gonna bring Goku back because, so.
We gotta teach Fidel how to fly, but then realize that she's a woman, so she can't be be strong in this series, so let's just stop it flying.
Like, actually, that's probably another thing, is like seeing more strong female characters, I think, because it's obviously not nearly like on like an even playing field with male and female characters, but it's better than it was in the 80s.
I was about to say, like, Nick, you're crazy. The female characters in our big three series are almost always, like, the joke of it. And I was like, I guess they are more relevant, though, than any female character in Dragon Ball. So perhaps we're right on the fact that it's changing at least slightly for the better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to be just, like, a gradual thing. And it's weird to think that probably one of the best examples of a female character in a shonen series staying a relevant person with the same role as a lot of the male characters is fucking Urza.
Yeah.
Because she's not a good character.
No. Give her credit for at least taking the charge or making your badass in a series a woman, but God, I just hope they write them better in the future.
Alright. Let's go back and then, I guess, go forward again.
Yep.
Alright. Also, yeah, Mikasa. Mikasa's a good example. Lots of female characters in Attack on Titan are badasses that aren't sexualized, so... baby steps, and we're seeing a little bit of progress. The second question from Windmeyer was, you both seem to enjoy role-playing. What was your greatest or worst role-playing experience? I'm assuming this is the non-sexual...
Yeah. That's what I heard it. I was like, do we answer this one out loud?
Best one was pretending to be Batman. Worst one was pretending to be Joker.
Yeah, I was like, the Joker one got really weird. It was not erotic at all. I kind of left it.
Joker in sexual situations is just, like, very rapey. And
it's a lot of sleeping gas and laughing gas. And by the end of it, it's, yeah, let's just say I can't smell fucking bleach without passing out now. Really weakened my... Really did a number on my immune system. I'm going to just outright ignore the worst one. He said best or worst, so I'm going to forego the worst one, and I'm going to instead say my favorite role-playing experience, my favorite moment in role-playing was way back in the day, and some people here might recognize the name of it. We did a campaign called the Death Clock Campaign.
Yes.
With myself and Nick were in it, and Lord Cat, and Spoonie was our DM, Angry Joe was in it, Skitch,
Sean.
Paul and Sean were in it for a little bit. I feel like there was somebody after that that
was missing. Liz was in it for a while, and I think Linkara joined us for like one session before we just kind of fell apart and stopped playing.
I feel like there's another person, though, I'm missing from the group at the time. Lord Cat, Skitch, myself, you... Joe. I guess it was just alright.
That's it.
Alright, I feel like I'm missing this one. But anyways, there was one particular moment that will always stand out to me is like, holy shit, this was so awesome. And it was this battle we had in the Temple of Morgana. It was like this underground place. We were chasing this elven betrayer who had screwed us over at one point. We had this big epic fight. And the thing that's so awesome was it was so climactic. We like entered into it on this panel that teleported us to different places on the map, and we all had to converge. We had to run towards this temple and prevent the elf from like completing this, you know, ritualistic spell. And you were the warrior. You were Victor. And you ran up. You like charged up the stairs, and you essentially got locked into like this mortal combat with the guy where you're just murdering each other. And it has just like the best role-playing, you know, D&D tabletop experience is when it's so cinematic and visual, and it had a story you just could not write better, where he tries to just say, fuck it, I'm just gonna abandon this fight and run up the stairs and finish this ritual, and Victor's like, I'm taking my attack of opportunity, and you fucking crit and just behead him. It was so awesome. Spoonie, just a fantastic dungeon master. It was such an awesome experience. Afterwards, it was big twist, and oh, it was just amazing.
Spoonie, I know a lot of people disagree with his approach to dungeon mastering because he is of the opinion that the DM should challenge the players and push them because then if they win, it's tremendously satisfying. And we had not just that fight, but at least one other, maybe another beyond that, that did have an incredibly satisfying feeling where as a group we felt, oh yeah, we won, you know. And that's his great strength. I mean, you could argue, like, oh, it's actually the DM's job to work with the players to create a satisfying, immersive story. But that fight was one of the best things ever, because, like, oh, I rolled a nat 20, and he's like, dick!
It was so awesome. You couldn't have written it any better, where it's
And there was also other stuff that was happening, like, Joe got... was like ran up the steps to help out, and the guy had like this ring of ram.
That's right.
Threw him off the pedestal and knocked him away.
It fucking like knocked him off a pyramid, so we had to like start calculating fall damage for essentially falling like two stories. Joe's still trying to like get off. It was such an epic fight, a great conclusion. That entire campaign is a tremendous amount of fun. I wish, I don't know if there are still out there. I hope there are recordings of it somewhere.
I think that there might be.
I'm not sure.
We'd have to check on the old Ustream, I think, in order to get those.
Yeah, but regardless, if you can find them, fantastic stuff.
There's another fight, just to bring it up, where basically this one king had been like imprisoned in Amber, and we had to find a way to free him because we had been framed for it. Mm. And so we managed to get back there. We had, like, this portal open into the throne room where he was.
Oh, my God, that's right!
And so we had the ritual ready so that we could free him on, like, a scroll. I think that was why we had gone down into this for the first battle in the first place. But it took a long time to cast the spell. So for the entire battle, Joe just had to sit there not doing anything as he recited this ritual. And we were engaging the guards and trying to prevent them from interfering so that we could do this. And so for 10 turns, we were just trying to hold them off as reinforcements kept pouring in. And at one point, one of them, like, barely missed Joe, and he just made his concentration to keep on casting the spell. And then at the very end, he rolled, like, his arcane check, and he rolled, like, an 18. And it was like, yes, I did it! And we freed him, and you know, there's this big thing, because, like, yeah, we freed him, and the king's on our side now. We chased after the guy who had framed us. We, like, knocked him off a window and stuff. It was such a great, satisfying like finish to like that chapter of the story.
I had forgotten how awesome that with the Amber King and the portal. That was a great one because it was a different kind of fight too, in that it wasn't let's just kill these enemies because we were trying to defend ourselves. So it was like we can't kill these guards. We have to, you know, non-lethal damage and just try to defend. And it's all like protecting one unit. Yeah, that was great.
We also, of course, had we were fighting like men from that fight. So Not for that campaign. A lot of great moments from that. But sometimes things just tick. There's no perfect formula for it that is like, oh, it's going to be great every single time. But in general, if you have people that work well together, things will go well. And I'm not going to say what my worst role-playing experience was, but I can tell you that I was, for a long time, part of a game where there were five out of, like, a dozen people who were toxic to the game.
And it was called Death Clock. I'm like, uh-oh.
No, but people who caused trouble and then would not be punished accordingly because of friendships that had nothing to do with the game. And when there was pushback from people like myself and some other friends, then we would get the punishment instead. And so eventually I just kind of like left. Like my reasons for staying there were gone. And I didn't even like say goodbye. I was just like, stop showing up one day.
They're just like, hey, Nick, you want to take these chips on? Yep, that's the last I ever spoke to him.
Essentially. I have some regrets in how things were handled in that, but not a lot. Because I greatly dislike the people I did not get along with. I have no regrets for the way things ended between myself and the people I did not get along with. I do, however, wish that things had gotten a bit better with the people who were, you know, kind of in charge of running the game.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Just a quick aside then, for people who are curious, again, I don't know if Death Clock's out there somewhere, but if you are curious, we did also, me and Nick were part of a game called Wormwick that I believe you can find the sessions either on Lord Catch YouTube or I believe most of them are out there. And then we also did a campaign called Shadowlands that Mecha GMer from Peter.
Yeah, and he started reposting that over to YouTube now.
Yeah, so. I think it may have just finished, or he's getting close to it.
He's getting along to it. I think he's around 2/3 of the way through.
Okay, I forget how many sessions that went. I feel like it was only
It went like 30 sessions.
Oh, okay, then yeah, he's still got a little bit left. But if you're curious, check it out. You can do it there, and then it's also frequently Nick is also in a game on Saturdays. So
yeah,
there you go.
Sporadically, I think, around this time, but it'll grow more frequent now, I think. And also, side note, Shadowland is my favorite campaign ever that I have been a part of. It was just consistently entertaining for me, so. We had some good moments in there, mostly just because we played siblings who got along like siblings, so.
Who bickered and squabbled.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Did a lot of improv, so.
It's weird. I had a moment today where I was like, I really wish I had that like fucking time turny hourglass dealy that Hermione had in the fucking third Harry Potter book. And I was like, and then I realized the only thing I do with it is like, now I have like 7 hours a week I could use to just play role playing games again. It's like, that's probably not the best use of this fucking instrument of God that lets me manipulate time space.
All right, moving on.
You want me to read the next one?
I got this one.
Okay.
Got stuff from Lioncoon here. Let's see. Where is the question in all this?
I believe it's about our favorite One Piece moments.
One Piece question. What are your favorite One Piece moments? My personal favorite include Luffy's first time entering Gear 2nd, the crew facing off against CP9 on the Tower Ramparts, Luffy facing off against the three admirals in Marineford, and recently Coruscant's death with the cinematic sprite of Law crying while Cannonfire drowns him out. Sticks fresh in my mind. I will go with a very not obvious moment, just because it is the moment where I realized I was a big One Piece fan. Basically, my friends have been kind of bothering me to trick it out for a while, and I had seen the Four Kids dub and was like, eh, I don't know. But I read it, and this was back when I was far more patient about manga that had been suggested to me, I'll admit, because I just had a lot more free time and I tended to just zone out when I was reading stuff and do nothing but read for hours on end, when now it's just like, I've read so many good series now that, like, I don't have that kind of patience anymore for manga. I know I feel much more confident in my ability to distinguish if a series is going to be worth my time now. And but I got to, you know, many arcs deep, and not many, but several arcs deep in One Piece before finally I got to this moment. It was when they were on the Island of the Giants. And
not Elbaf, Little Garden.
Yeah. So this, to give you some, you know, context, this was after Arlan Park.
Yes.
And I was still on the fence about the series. And so literally there's just a moment where Luffy gets gobbled up by a fucking Brontosaurus. And he just kind of goes, eh? And he gets as he's getting swallowed. He gets swallowed. Everyone's like, oh my god! Then one of the giants chops the Brontosaurus' head off in its long neck. Luffy comes out through the wound, and he's still just going, eh? And that one was just like,
you're just like, this is awesome.
That was so fucking ridiculously funny. And so I was like, I like this manga now.
In that same stroke of that moment where I kind of realized how much I love the series, Alabasta is really like the point where I like cemented myself as a One Piece fan, because that's kind of where I picked up the series after reading a little bit of the first volumes and watching a little bit of the anime. I was like, huh, where should I really start reading? And I just heard like Alabasta arc mentioned over and over again, so I started with that. And the point where Vivi is climbing the clock tower to try to get to the bomb, and just the concerted group efforts that have to come together to help get her up there, because she like tries to get there and they're like, holy crap, I have to get all the way to the top. And she, you know, she's like, I'll never make it up there in time. And like Zoro, you know, brings her up, you know, slashes her upwards. And then like Sanji's halfway up and he's like, oh, I'll get you the rest of the way, kicks her all the way up there. And then she gets to the top and there are two guards there. And it's like, oh shit, she's, you know, she almost did it. And then she knocks them out. And then she gets there and like, oh shit, the bomb's on a fucking timer. God damn it, Crocodile. And like, oh, it's just so satisfying to see all that work go into it. That's that. I think one of my favorite aspects of One Piece 2, and it's maybe the reason why I still like him despite the fact that his character really should be my least favorite, when Sanji gets to do something subtly genius or really, really useful, like, one thing that never gets enough credit is Sanji closing the gates of justice and effectively stopping the whirlpools to help them escape Enies Lobby. I always love that. It's like, it's not like made to be this huge moment. Everyone's just like, where'd the whirlpools go? And Sanji's like, oh yeah, I closed the gates because I had some foresight in the situation. Like, oh yeah, I always forget Sanji's supposed to be like the deceptively smartest member of the group. So yeah, moments like that I always appreciate.
It's Mr. Prince. It's kind of like those moments where Zoro shows off what an effective leader he is, but then still steps to the side. So because Luffy's the captain and stuff, you know, where he stops the conflict or stops the crew from going after Usopp, or that moment you love so much where he offers himself instead of Luffy to Kuma. So yeah good stuff.
So question here from Molderman, he says, I was just wondering, I know Unohana being dead and never coming back is kind of a running joke by now, but with Bleach seemingly hitting its last couple of fights for what, 2 or 3 years now, do you feel like she will pop into the story at some point?
Well, if I'm being completely honest, actually, no.
At this point, you're like, she's dead and really not coming back.
I really think that. I'm continuing the promise of saying that, basically, because it's my penance for being wrong. But, you know, that was why I designed it that way in the first place, was because I can do this for humor, and also it'll be my way of acknowledging that I'm wrong the longer that I go on with it until eventually it ends. I don't have any regrets about that. And it, really, it's just a matter of Kubo has kind of changed the way he's done his manga, which it has gone from having shit tons of characters to killing off shit tons of characters, who, it turns out, were never really important to begin with. So I think that the most shocking decision to kill characters off has come from the ones they turn into zombies, though. And I do think that those are the most likely to come back in some capacity. And also, I think it's goes without saying that the door has been left open on the most recently killed off character. Spoilers for tomorrow's discussion. So there are some where it's just like, I think that they'll probably still come back. But characters like Ukitake, like Unohana, characters that were built up as powerful, I think that they have been killed off to demonstrate that this war is serious and lots of people could really die. It's still not going to be really important characters like Ichigo's friends, but a lot of people will die, you know.
And actually, like, oh no, we lost 7 vice captains in this war.
Right. And I think that it's, you know, that is effective in casting doubt on whether or not Hitsugaya and the others who have been turned to zombies, whether or not they might actually come back. But seriously, though, Hitsugaya is like the second most popular character in the series. You're not going to kill him off screen.
Not going to kill him off screen without having like a huge moment. It was like, oh, he like lost against BG9 or was like fighting even with him. And then the next time we see him, he's a fucking zombie. Like, what a kick to the dick of his fan base that would be.
I mean, he's had his own fucking movie. Like, that's how popular he is. You're not just going to kill him off that way. I don't care if you killed off Sasakibe, all right? or fucking Kira. Oh, Izuru's dead. That means anyone can die.
No one's safe.
Actually, let's see. Who the fuck has been killed off in this so far? They've implied that Hisagi's been killed off by the sniper now, which is like, I like Hisagi, but not that much to really care that much about it. They've seemingly killed off Hitsugaya and fucking Matsumoto. Yachiru's running around without her uniform for some reason. She didn't just leave her badge behind, she left her fucking uniform behind. Did she change in the middle of the fucking building? I don't know.
She's just running around naked for some reason. I'm just like, alright.
I want cookies!
Whatever. Just like, you get cookies when you put pants on.
Ukitake's dead. New Squad 9 captain is seemingly dead. Komura and Iba have gone off to confront Yuhibak and haven't shown up since. What the fuck happened to them?
Who is that?
Iba and Komamura, they...
Did they?
They went off to confront Yuhibak, remember, when Komura went full dog after he defeated Bombietta, and Iba was like, come on, Captain, let's go do this. And then they went to confront Yuhibak, and then we never saw if they actually reached him or not.
Oh my god, that's right. The last thing I don't know why, the last thing I remember is, like, didn't Komura go to some giant dog thing? And I guess that happened before that fight as, like, a flashback to show him, like, becoming full dog, but... Holy shit. It's just some weird fucking Soul Society is like the fucking charred black outline of fucking a dog, and you're just like, oh, I guess that's what happened to Kumamura.
So, yeah.
He got fucking atom bombed a little while back.
So, yeah, they killed off, I think, somewhere around a third of the seeded characters. Like, definitively killed off. So, I don't know. It's hard to say, you know. I think Unohana, though, her story was probably complete at that point. I made the joke, she's never gonna come back, definitely not, because to that point, Bleach characters did not just die and never come back, unless they were like fucking
nobody villains.
Sasakibe. And I guess Yamamoto also had died at that point.
Alright.
Is my turn to,
Yes.
Yeah. Dear Chris and Nick, insert verbal fellation. Quick question. In the spirit of the One Piece Toriko Dragon Ball crossover, pitch me your favorite crossover plus plot. Well, you mean like crossover we'd want to see?
Yeah, well, like, you know how, I don't know, if you ever see the One Piece Toriko Dragon Ball crossover?
I saw parts of it, but, eh.
Essentially just the idea of, like, you know, a bunch of series crossovers for some wacky one-time movie or something like that.
I don't know.
I'll give you this, because we talk about how it's almost kind of like a sports series. The cast of World Trigger plays a football match against the Damon Devil Bats. No triggers or anything like that, just their own natural abilities, but they'll have so many of their wacky powers anyway, so I think that'd be goofy, silly fun.
Go with that one. I'm bad at thinking of crossover stuff, honestly.
Okay, I'm trying to think if there's any other one I want to throw out real quick. And for some reason, Nogami Neru meets up with the babies from that twin romance fucking manga with the baby twins. What was that fucking called? Love Life or something like
Love So Life.
Love So Life. He just shows up, starts fucking with them. Like, she took my truck, and now your truck is a dog that bites you. Like, you're a dick. It's like, this is so weird. These characters hate each other. There's no joy in the crossing of these communities and audience. Oh, all right. Our next email is from Blockhead. He says, first question here. Which are your favorite manga characters appearance and design-wise? He says, forget about how badly they may be written or how shitty they may be as characters. Just look, focus on looks and art style alone. So I guess what are your favorite like manga character designs out there?
I hate answering questions like this because I never think about them when I'm like reading a series, honestly.
I have a few. Because whenever I do a One Piece character on my forum, I use usually like an anime character or manga character as like the image of it, just because I need an image to work with and I'm terrible at coming up with them on my own. So
it's called a PB.
Yeah, exactly.
Played by.
So Chitoge from Nisekoi, for some reason, yeah, I like her design a lot. For some reason, it's something about the way she's drawn. She always just has like a very, like I'm like, oh, well, like I could like it's very refreshing and like cheery disposition. But just like something about the way she's drawn, I'm just like that's it's always a distinct style to her. And you know, in the sense of how you know not good of a character or anything they might be. Buka from Air Gear, I love a lot. There's really not nearly enough representation of black characters in manga. And I always love Buka, this big, burly, huge guy with the scars on it. He's, you know, this fat, giant, fat guy on roller skates. But he always just rolled around literally like he was a tank. So I always thought he was pretty cool. So I'll throw my hat in on that.
I actually kind of see where you're coming from with Chitoge. It's like a very, like, easy to recognize design, you know, the blonde hair with the red bow, to the point that there's some other anime series, I forget what it's called, where there's like an important blonde female who has a red bow, and you're just like, what the fuck's Chitoge doing in that? Oh, that's not her. It's just another blonde character with a red bow that looks just like her. God damn it.
Dicks.
Designs. I actually like the way Natsu looks from Fairy Tail. I don't know what it is, though. I think that just I like the lack of symmetry on his clothes and stuff.
That is a unique point. He is one of those few characters where it's just like, I got shit all over the place.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it goes too far with it, though, because then you get, like, pre-time skip Sasuke with like, oh, he's got leather buckles on one arm, he's got this pouch on the other side.
He hasn't tried too hard. Yeah.
Right. And I love the thing where Kishimoto is just like, I love the design him so much, I kept on adding little bits and bobs. And it's like, yeah.
It's like the fucking Nomura where it's like, yeah, I really like zippers of my fucking Final Fantasy characters, so I just keep adding them until Sora from Kingdom Hearts is basically a walking thing of zippers with a keyblade like duct taped to it somewhere. Second question from Blockhead here. He says, if you were able to go back in time for any event from happening in a manga, because you guys would do that if you had a time machine, what would you recommend?
For a more recent example, Azami's got an awesome design. It's very simple, but it's so effective.
Mm-hmm. If we could rectify any event happening in a manga, what would we do?
This kind of goes back to that manga that are good, except for one moment question.
It is. I guess like it's just something different. If it's like something small, I could go back and be like, I guess I'll change that slightly. Maybe like this isn't manga, but really go back to that movie and not make Sanji a weird pedophile, being like, oh, I get to see Nami-chan get tits one day. I can go back and do that, and then I'm like, oh wait, I should have gone back further and stopped 9/11. Like shit, back in the future. I'm like, I really blew my one shot of time machine.
I think I'll just stick with my old stuff.
Okay. And his last one here, he says, when will I get a shout-out for pledging to your Patreon? I wasn't included in there. I believe at the time this is written, that was true. I did go back in to give him his proper credit. But just to be safe, thank you, Blockhead, for supporting us. Also to Bear Crusher Balky, as he's known on our One Piece forum. So, thank you, sir.
All right, awesome. More questions from Tropical Blitz.
He's like, I'm just going to call us the Tropical Blitz Q&A.
This one is for Nick, but Chris can answer it as well, since it relates to the new rules regarding the recommendations now. During the last Q&A episode, Nick mentioned that you guys will not be taking requests to read terrible things. Does that mean that the manga adaptation of Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf is now officially off the table? Yeah.
Is there a manga adaptation of Mein Kampf?
No, not surprise me. There's stuff based on Discworld, but yeah, that kind of stuff. I don't remember when I mentioned that. I think that it was... Did I mention, like, you know, fucking don't send us, like, child pornography or some shit like that?
It's just been, like, a flat don't send us awful things, I believe. Which I think...
We'll read bad series, but yeah, don't send us deliberately offensive stuff, you know?
Which is weird, because we've read fucking, like, two series from the Wolf guy, or the Wolfman guy, so... I think it just applied more to, like, I just, you know, there should be some not
we have we have standards, basically, so.
I think it's also to no outright hentai or things like that.
Right.
Like, you know, series on
we're not gonna sit, we're not going to sit here and talk about, I was like, so which of these sex scenes made you get off the most, Chris?
Like, I'm like, well, I jerked off most chapter 7, but chapter 8 had a really sweet triple penetration scene. You know the chapter, airtight, like, for weeks. It was fantastic.
Yeah. If you want to, like, even, like...
Also, there was a lot of subtext in, I believe, the way she was getting plowed for the Taiwanese-Chinese relationships.
None of that stuff. And if we're talking, like, even, like, to the point of shit like, I don't fucking know, Monster Musume, or whatever the fuck it's called, the one that's, like, really popular now because it got an anime adaptation, that's still ecchi, at least. So, not... in that regard, but yeah, don't send us, like, super hentai stuff. Don't send us super offensive gorn or anything like that. So.
Well, it's, I guess maybe the other thing is, I know when you did, one of your early Right to Left was...
My standards are way lower now.
Okay. I was gonna say, like, would those series be possible to suggest now?
Oh, well, yeah, I was like, Parasite, that's fine, you know.
Frankenfran.
What?
Frankenfran, wasn't that on there?
Oh yeah, I've talked about that since then. Even the one that was like the one about the Kona Azure series. I forget what it's called. It was like about a girl who basically becomes a hentai voice actress. Even that, I would not be remiss to talk about. If we're talking about My Balls, which is basically porn, it's just not an explicit, but only barely so. No, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know. The line is there, basically. We just want you to know, there is stuff that we will not do, but there is a lot of stuff that we will do.
I feel like what we should do, Nick, when you're like, send your recommendations in, we'll say, send your recommendations, asterisk, into weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, and like, just no way, just like, it's an unspoken thing that asterisk stands to be like, all recommendations are subject to be declined, right, or something like that. Like, if we're like, oh, no.
We reserve the right to say no.
We reserve the right to be like, ew.
Second question. You guys mainly cover Weekly Shonen Jump manga and made pretty clear which series you consider as your favorites, but what about the other two major magazines?
There's another magazine besides Jump?
Yeah, yeah. Which series in Weekly Shonen Magazine or Weekly Shonen Sunday do you guys prefer? We've talked about some of them, haven't we?
I can honestly tell you right now, if you put a gun to my head, I could not tell you the difference between the other two magazines. I know one has Fairy Tale in it, and I think...
No, they're asking, like, which series in those do we like?
That's what I mean. I know one of them has Fairy Tale in it, and I think the other one has Attack on Titan. I couldn't tell you which one is which or any other series in those magazines.
I think Magi is in there. No, it's not weekly, so it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I honestly...
Is Magi weekly? I don't even know.
It was.
It might be. And Attack on Titan isn't weekly, so it wouldn't be in either of them.
I thought Attack on Titan wasn't one of them, though.
Oh, God, right here. Our naivete is
exposed. This is what I mean. Like, I don't honestly know. Because it doesn't have a Weekly Shonen Jump, like, service where I can get that magazine each month and see what's in it.
So it's on them, not us.
Well, it's, I mean, to be fair, Crunchyroll just gets a whole bunch of series and lists them on their site as, like, here, these are the series, and they update every so often. You know, whereas Weekly Shonen Jump creates a brand that's like, here's our magazine each week with each series in it. So it's easier to be more cognitively aware of that as opposed to, you know, getting my, you know, legal digital manga from Crunchyroll, and it's like, I just saw six series that I read and I read them, but I have no idea that the, you know, some of them are in the same magazine or some of them aren't, or, you know, whatever, or so forth. And I just don't follow that, that sort of information, I guess.
Next question. Bleach question, but also a question about the sexuality of a recently deceased character in the series. Do you guys think that Baz B and Jugo were in love? This is something I've been thinking about a lot, especially since with Volume 69 having come out recently and the preview of Volume 70, Kubo makes the connection between Basby's and Jugo's family names, Hoshwat and Black, with their Sternritter epithets, the Heat and the Balance, implying that the letters both Jugo and Buzzard, Basby, had taken when they joined Jugobok's army were each of each other's surnames. Bam, reading too much into this, but we do have a heavily implied homosexual relationship already in Bleach with Yumichika and Ikkaku. Really? I don't know about that. Sure, it's not as they spelled out, but the hints are there. Could this also be the case here? I think you're reading too much into this.
This same Tropical Blitz who did the Chinese-Taiwanese line question. Here's the thing. I can see where you're coming from. I think you're making it more serious than what Kubo intended. I think he definitely was playing into the Ho-Yay factor. That he was definitely like, oh yeah, no, it's like these two guys who are really attractive and they, you know, I'm going to like tease that maybe they have a thing for each other. But I don't think he actively was like, no, they have romantic feelings for one another. I think he just created a, you know, relatively non-interesting flashback that, you know, gave them some kind of relationship and went from there. I think it's just like a ship tease, essentially.
I don't think that... I kind of get where you're coming from, because Kubo has not really been the type to really push boundaries in terms of actually just portraying homosexual relationships the way that Yu Yu Hakusho is explicitly like, yeah, that guy's gay. That guy there is his lover. And now they're going off to hell together, basically. You know, it's not like that. I don't know, maybe, but I think that the whole thing with their family names and so on and so forth was meant to just imply that they were really good friends who had grown up together and stuff like that. And, I mean, you could say that maybe they had a romantic interest in each other, but you could also just as easily say, no, they didn't, because there's not really evidence for or against it, you know? So, yeah. I mean, it's especially weird with Bleach, because outside of stuff like Orihime is in love with Ichigo, and Ichigo's mom and dad loved each other, and Kaien and his wife loved each other. Yep. It's just kind of like romantic.
Married couples. But every other relationship in Bleach has just been subtly teased before eventually just being dropped for something else.
Yeah. Remember how Orihime used to love Ichigo? And now she just kind of gets embarrassed because her cleavage is sticking out everywhere. All the time. Yeah.
And people just keep forcing her into outfits that accentuate them more.
I mean, I guess you could also have the same argument about were Ichigo and Rukia in love? Well, maybe, but the point wasn't whether they were explicitly romantically involved with each other, or rather wanted to be romantically involved with each other. It was simply the fact that they were close and had a companionship of some sort.
That important to each other to go through those lengths to save her.
So that was also the point of the flashback, was the fact that they were so close and then they were torn apart. That was what the tragedy was not supposed to be, where they were making out in between those scenes. But they were. I don't know.
Who knows?
As for Yumichika and Ikkaku, I don't really think that they're gay. Or rather, I don't think Ikkaku's gay, at least. And I'm not actually convinced that Yumichika's necessarily gay, because there's not...
He's just flamboyant.
Yeah, he might not be gay, you know? Maybe he is.
Next email, then?
Yes.
This is from... Squeeb Plube.
Interesting.
I'm going to assume that's Norwegian or gibberish. It's either a Norwegian name or it's a name from SpongeBob. I'm going to go with one of the two of those. He says, hello, why roll time and roll tea? I've been following your podcast. It's the first episode on That Got the Glass, and I love your combination of in-depth analysis and silly jokes. I have a few questions I want to ask. First, say you guys somehow ended up having the actual mangaka of one of your regular series on as a guest of your podcast, and they either have a translator or they somehow grasp the English language, which mangaka would it be and why, and what questions would you ask them?
I would go with Richard Inigaki, the writer of Aisho 21. So I could be like, yo, man, what was up with that fucking Teikoku Alexander arc, yo?
And he just starts crying. He's like, no one liked it! And we just had this weird, like, awkward podcast.
And I'll also be like, did Hiruma and Maori ever go out? Tell me! Tell me now! Well, they are still classmates, the guys. That's not an answer! Tell me!
I'll kill you! Wow, Nick.
Did Senna and Suzuna have kids? Tell me!
Did they ever fuck? I bet they fucked, didn't they? He's like, I always imagined it was an innocent sort of thing.
They both look like children, haven't you noticed? I don't care!
Eventually they get older and they fuck! Tell me it happened!
No problems.
I learned English for this. I feel like everyone would be assume my first answer would be Oda. I don't know if I'd like. I'm not gonna say I wouldn't want to have Oda on. I would blow a man to have Oda on this podcast. But I feel like if I had Oda on, it would be really hard for me to separate being a fanboy and actually like having a conversation with him and not just be like, "It was thank you for changing my life," and crying and shit. I feel like I'd actually almost rather have Daisuke Asahara on. Because from reading, World Trigger, and particularly reading in a lot of his comments, I've picked up, I should mention this, there's currently a bundle sale going on with Weekly Shonen Jump. If you want to get all five volumes of World Trigger that are out digitally, you can get it for $20 right now, which is actually a really good deal. From reading some of his author comments and things like that, I'm like, oh, this guy's like a really kind of like funny and seems like a pretty grounded guy. So I feel like I could actually have a very, like, we could have, rather, a very worthwhile conversation with him, particularly about, like, you know, how things went from early on and how he portrayed the series to how they are now and how it's almost like a sports series. Like, I feel like we could get, like, a really good discussion out of that. As opposed to me being like, Sanji's amazing, but Usopp's my favorite! So I would go with Asahara. I feel like there would be a good conversation there.
Okay.
He's very witty. I was just to mention we have a Twitter now. I made one and I'm using it to just post like my occasionally more nerdy manga thoughts as well as like time updates and things like that.
Right.
It's WMR Podcast, at WMR Podcast. And all one word, there's no underscore shit like that. And I posted up that in the back of the first volume of World Trigger, he posts, like, a couple comments on characters, and he posts in relation to Yuma, he's like, ah, the duck face, here's the origin of it. And I was like, ah, ha, ha, he talks about duck face. Then I flip to the next page, he talks about Kitora, and he's like, when I created this character, my editor had a comment about, like, don't you think her personality's kind of mean? Readers won't really like her. And I said, So I balanced it out by making her tits bigger. And he's dead serious about it. He's like, people won't like her. Fuck it, I'll just make her tits bigger and you guys will deal with the nuance.
Well, she's not even, like, an incredibly busty character.
No!
She's got, like, normal proportions still.
But I'm just like, the idea, he's like, oh, people won't like her because she's kind of mean. I'm going to make her tits bigger and they'll stop bitching.
That's a good way to get a lot of manga readers to stop bitching about someone.
Oh, look, that's pretty genius, actually.
People put up with a lot of bullshit from fucking Future Diary Girl because she's got a hot design, supposedly.
Yeah.
Her character's crazy. I don't know why anyone likes her, except that she looks hot.
Nick?
Allegedly.
They say, don't put your dick in crazy. Everyone knows you want to put it in crazy at least once.
We saw that character put his dick in crazy.
It was
we saw them bone. They're on the fucking page boning, and it's just like, I don't want to see this.
No, why am I sad, Nick?
They're not 6. They're not 18 yet. I feel creepy.
He also has... Oh, here we go. Second question. If a character from any manga somehow ended up crashing into your house and asked if they could stay at your house for a week, who would you want it to be... who would you best want to have as a guest in your house, essentially, for a week?
This is a difficult question because a favorite character would not necessarily be the same. You know, you could have a character that you really like, but understand that they would be very difficult to live with. For example, I would never want this to be Hiruma because he would fuck with me and find blackmail material on me.
Yeah, I was like, he's going to blackmail you, take all your money.
So you could look at this multiple ways. You know, you could go the route of like, oh, what anime girl do I think is really hot that wants to sit and crash on my couch or in my bed?
I'm like, so I should change my immediate answer, Kitora, you're saying?
I'm going to go the route of, my girlfriend might be listening to this, so...
So you're like, a person who could have conversations with me about respect towards monogamous relationships. Boom, done.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what hot anime chicks would you pick?
Right. So I actually thought about this, and I thought, if you want someone to actually crash with you, then you actually want them to be someone who's capable of, you know, respecting your boundaries, and being, you know, polite, and not, you know, kind of not really being too bothersome, maybe helping out with the house, or maybe being able to find a job and bring an income. And I thought about it.
Don't stay in a week. You're not getting a roommate.
Well, one of the characters that we've seen a lot of their home life is actually Ichigo in Bleach. Because that guy went and found himself a fucking job while he was still in high school. And I think that he has enough sense to him where he would not really bring bullshit into the house unless a ghost was chasing
him. He keeps his bullshit outside, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that he would be a good roommate.
My first thought was, like, Osamu, because I'm like, he comes to my house, we're way too nerdy, and I'm like, he'll probably be so much of a fucking sis that he'll be like, hey, can I pay for half the rent of your month while I'm here? I'm like, okay, sweet. But then I started thinking about more, and I was like, I definitely couldn't think of a girl I'd bring over, because there's no women in anime who are at an age that would be acceptable for a 26-year-old to be like, hey, I'll hang out with this chick for a while. Oh, you're still in high school? Okay, well, that's not going to be creepy at all. So I think my answer would be Soma, because I feel like he'd be a fun person, but in addition, he's a character who cooks. I feel like that would be a cool... Because like, if they're staying... Presumably they're staying rent-free. I feel like they're going to try to do something in return, at least Soma would. So I feel like he'd make some really cool shit and be able to teach me some good cooking tips. And I'd be like, ah, this was a really worthwhile experience. And also, maybe he'll have some of his hot high school friends over.
For me to creep on.
Yes, for me to be like in the other room, like, so everybody enjoying things? I have beer in the fridge if you like some. Like, why are you so weird? I'm like, I don't know.
And like, Megumi's there and she's all fucking freaked out. Aaron is just like, God damn it, Yukihira, how did you convince me to come here? This place is boring, and there's a horrible, creepy man here.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The shit stole us in the shithole of the world.
You told me that there would be wonderful chocolate here, and I have not had any yet.
Like, no. I said we're near chocolate. I didn't say it was good chocolate.
I said there would be chocolate here. That's all.
Yeah, that's all it is. I'm really close to Hershey Park, was what I was trying to say. But no, getting some cool cooking tips from you, or from someone, I think that'd be pretty
good,
cool.
Get something out of it, yeah.
Yeah. And then he has one last question here. Basically, we reference the fact that American comics have, you know, universes that, you know, constantly cross over. So, you know, Captain America and Iron Man meet up all the time. There's no real Shonen Jump crossover like that. You know, there are the Jump games, but he's saying, how would, do we think a Shonen Jump Crisis crossover in manga could work?
It would have to very least have to be limited to, like, you know,
the a short story.
Or, like, the action series or something like that. Because otherwise you would just have characters that are just like, well, our worlds are being destroyed.
Yeah, it's just like, I guess I won't be marrying Chitoge or Onodera. Because they are dead. They were killed by Crocodile.
I don't think the cooking food will help in this situation. I will, you know,
you can
keep on cooking it. But,
you can keep trying, Soma. I appreciate the effort. I think Acacia might just take over everything, though. I think it really only works in one-shots. I've read a one-shot that was essentially like a preview for Jump Stars where a lot of the characters hung out, and I've seen like the, you know, One Piece Toriko Dragon Ball crossover.
Or
and
there was
that
also that,
cool.
There was that one that ran recently, which was like the it was done by the artist of Shokugeki no Soma. Just had the female leads of the different series that have anime adaptations, and they just came and hung out and ate a little bit. That was you know, a few of them did fan service, and then Chika did, and it was just like, oh no, she's too innocent. She just has a very innocent reaction. They're like, oh, thank goodness.
That was good. I think. Like, the those short bits can work, but I don't think anything even remotely extended will work, just because there's too many tones to take from those series, and one of the greatest strengths of manga against comics is that manga is, you know, almost always written by one person the entire way through, so you don't have to worry about different interpretations mixing up, you know, the characters', you know, integral strengths. There's not going to be, you know, Oda's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to do this crossover manga, and I'll write all the One Piece stuff, and Kubo will write all the Bleach stuff. You're going to get different people writing it, presumably even like a new person completely, and I feel like it's just not going to be the same stuff. So it works in like a small dose of like fan service, but I don't think anything extended could really work.
And And also, I mean, the whole point of specifically cite a Crisis-style crossover, the whole point of those is to have this massive event where the status quo of a lot of stuff gets shaken up. Mm-hmm. And you just shouldn't do that in manga.
I mean,
leave everyone to their own devices.
The Crisis manga you created is the only Crisis that's shaking up the status quo of these series otherwise. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's it for Squeeb Ploop's questions. He says, good luck beating those woodworking assholes.
Alright. Next up, we will take a question from Aquaconda, using the name they have on Chris's One Piece forum. Question is, who are your favorite and least favorite shonen protagonists and why? My favorite is probably Midoriya from My Hero Academia for being a genuinely smart person, having interesting developments, and simply for being incredibly likable. My least favorite will be Natsu for devolving from a generic, if entertaining character to a hypocritical, sociopathic man-child. Also, Natsu bullshits his way through fights. That's a very strong opinion, and I congratulate you for it. Least favorite in a walk, Edison. Like, no issue there. Just fucking... Well, hold on. Spider-Man was a shonen manga.
We're counting these guys now? Like, this is just the
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, so him. Yeah. Worst Spider-Man. Yeah, so it depends on how you want to interpret those. But there's my two answers for the worst. Favorite protagonist? Oh. What you gotta think here? I guess I'll go with Luffy. Mostly because I tend to like characters other than the protagonist in a lot of manga, so out of the ones that are, you know, popular now, I think he springs to mind the most.
I was gonna say Luffy, but I'm also like, I stop and think. I love Luffy in a lot of ways, but what I think Luffy's like most admirable traits are the kind of the ones that separate him from most other heroes, and the fact that he's like kind of not evil, but he just has a very like carefree freedom side to him that isn't particularly necessarily admirable. It's just kind of his distinct way of going about things. So I think if I'm going to say a favorite, I almost want to say maybe even Naruto. I feel like when Naruto's at his best, they created a really sympathetic character whose story was easy to get behind, and the drive behind it was very, not necessarily relatable, but very easy, very empathetic. Like, you easily root for this character, and it's great seeing him transition from being the kid nobody likes to the one everyone admires.
By the end of that series, Naruto was pretty great. He had some rather unfortunate growing pains.
Yeah.
In the middle, like when he heard that they were going to expel Sasuke from the village, and he hyperventilated and passed out. That was very not good.
Listen, when he's at his best, I feel like he's really good. I have trouble picking the worst one, though. Because, I mean, there's bad ones out there, but I think the bad ones are mostly just boring. Like, you know, I don't care about Asta because he's boring. I don't care about Natsu because he's boring. Like, that's not necessarily bad, though. They're just missing traits that make them very, you know, compelling. I can't think of, like, an outright evil, douchey kind of character. It's Light. I kind of like Light, so. Hmm. The 13-year-old in me is always going to like Light.
He's so dark, guys. Yeah. Meanwhile, in the background, you hear fucking, "Somewhere I belong, yeah. I want to heal.
I want to kill everybody so I can be a god." I'm like, oh, man. Why did they never cross over?
Lincoln Note or some shit.
Lincoln Note.
Well, otherwise you got Death Park, and that sounds really weird.
Death Park sounds perfect for what we're going for.
That sounds like a Battle Royale ripoff, though.
Death Park. A bunch of preschoolers were left at the playground. Their parents haven't come to pick them up, so their only response is to kill each other until only one survives.
Like, it's like, why? Guys, there's no wall around the park. We can just leave whenever we want and walk back home. What?
Just like, it's just a kid strangling another one with the swing set. I'm like, this is so morbid, but I can't stop watching.
Somebody like puts spiked weights on the top of the slide and crushes the person at the bottom.
The kid just goes to swing on the merry-go-round. They're like, I installed a motor on that that'll spin until your skeleton rips from your body.
Actually, maybe this is a little bit too intricate. Oh, well.
I'm like, I'm 7. How did I come up with this?
The seesaw goes 300 feet in the air somehow.
And then you'll starve of oxygen and you die. I'm like, this is so elaborate for a fucking play school, preschool, but again, I can't stop worrying. It's so compelling.
Preschoolers just have stupid ideas, what can I say?
Yeah.
Except from Orin. Glad you started to do the Q&As again. First, a small remark towards Nick's knight-like suggestion of putting Satellizer in Claymore to save her from freezing. What a weird sentence. She would be dead in 5 minutes. Next, ever since I saw the first time I saw The Dark Knight Rises, I'm angry at Chris Nolan for stealing the Pell Saves Everyone by flying the bomb away from thing from One Piece. It is seriously the same scene. Well, they also did that thing in Angels and Demons, that one movie, or whatever.
The Dan Brown novel?
Yeah. They did that in the movie adaptation at the very least. I don't know if they did in the book, too. You know, flying a bomb away. That's from the original Batman, too. It's an old idea. You know?
Yeah, take
the bomb away to save someone. Chris, Spider-Man did that once, too.
Yeah, a character in Lost did it.
Yeah, it happens all the time, so don't complain about ripping. Yeah. Anyway, what manga arc or storyline do you guys want to see adapted on the big screen? For example, a real-life adaptation of Shokugeki no Soma's Autumn Election is his suggestion.
The Autumn Election would be the...
The thing you saw at the end of, basically.
Oh, so the tournament, then?
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing you saw the finals for, but not the preceding rounds.
I have now caught up with every English volume of it, though.
Sweet.
So I'm at the point now where they're about to do the Block A results. Soma, Kurokiba, and Hayama, side.
So basically, you just got the results there, and then the latter part of the tournament leading up to...
Yeah, basically all the matches then leading up to the finals.
So you got Arato versus Soma.
Don't tell him, don't spoil! All this stuff's still new to me.
I already told you this.
I know, but I just, like, I'm sitting here, like, what happens to Alice? How could she possibly lose to somebody?
I actually told you the wrong thing, actually. I got the, I told you a match that does not happen.
Ooh.
So, I did not spoil anything.
There you go.
By a complete accident.
Unintentionally, you spared me. Thank you.
Yeah. And you will see how Alice could possibly lose. Yeah.
Anyway. I'm cheating.
My suggestion, back when there were rumors that there was going to be a Bleach live-action movie, which are looking decreasingly, you know, likely at this point, it really doesn't seem like it's going to happen now, because it's just taking so long, or it's going to take a long fucking time for it to happen. My suggestion was that they should have it be all about Ichigo taking on the Grand Fisher. You know, become a freaking Soul Reaper, discover that one of these hollows that he's hunting down and killing is responsible for killing his mother, and defeat it. Or have a showdown with it or something like that. And that was my idea for it, because if you don't do that, you have to... Yeah, you need to play with the dog right now. Thanks. Okay. If you don't do that, then you have to have him getting his Soul Reaper powers. You've got to have him, Rukia, get captured and taken away. And he has to go to Soul Society after getting his powers back. And then he's got to, eventually... There's a lot to get through if you just go beyond the very first part of that series. And so that was my idea for it. I don't necessarily want to see a Bleach live-action movie, but I just wanted to bring that up because it's something that I had thought of a long time ago. So,
no, I actually agree. It would be the one I kind of almost think too, because I think it is, as you mentioned, plenty of times before, and I've thought about it from off your suggestion. It is a particularly interesting little short story that I think would work best in it. The thing I go for, like, I'm torn between, like, something that works as a standalone short story that the, general audience would be able to see, and then, like, oh, no, this thing would be really cool and I want to see it in a live-action big-budget thing. Like, I'd love to see the Alabasta arc in, like, a live-action big-budget thing, just, like, the fights and all the big, huge moments. But I'm like, there's no way you could possibly spend enough time to introduce a general audience to all of those characters and the ongoing plot while still leaving enough time to get to all that. You'd have to just be like, if you don't know what the fuck One Piece is about, I'm sorry, you're just not going to get it.
Or you just have to be like, here's Hero, here's Baymax, here are their friends, but the movie's called Big Hero 6.
And eventually there'll be
such
six.
Such a goddamn overrated film, I swear.
Or you do it like the the Marvel movies, where you do a big movie for each of the Straw Hats joining, and that way, by the time you get to Alabasta, everyone knows these characters, and that's okay. Now, some of the One Piece joining arcs aren't great, but that's fine. The Incredible Hulk was just an okay movie. Thor, not amazing. It was very okay. It's fine if they're like, okay. But, you get to Avengers, and it's great.
Yeah, and people's interest was bolstered because Iron Man was awesome, and Robert Downey Jr. showed up occasionally, so yeah. That was all they needed.
It's all I needed at the end. But, I'm trying to think of, like, a good standalone, but I think that Bleach one really kind of nails it.
And also, we have gotten the one big screen adaptation that absolutely needed to happen, which is All You Need Is Kill, becoming Edge of Tomorrow, so.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, I guess?
Yes. This is from, I don't know how to pronounce this.
Jits Debor. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, he says, if you can make your own...
Yeah.
If you can make your own manga, what genre would it be? Amusingly enough, we just did a bonus podcast about this a little bit.
Yeah. We've come up with a bunch of ideas for sports manga. I had another idea that isn't something we didn't talk about there that would have been a sports manga. I've had an idea that would be like an action series that is based around what do you call it? Gun kata type of, it would be a gun kata type of action series. So something very actiony, basically, no matter what.
Yeah. Good gun kata.
Unfortunately, I don't have the talent to make it.
this also is a reminder, just in case people are listening and aren't aware, if you are a champion patron, the bonus pod for this month is out. It's a top 10 sports that need a manga with a whole bunch of absurd premises for all of them. So I hope people enjoy it and listen to it. And there's also a poll you can vote for at the end for which series of those you'd like to read. So I'll use that as my answer for the question of what people would, or what sort of genre I'd like to make. I'd like to make the thing that people said they'd like to read, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Next is from...
It's like the fucking Scruff McCry talk episode of Simpsons, where it's like, shh, Lisa, the dog's talking. Woof, 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 woof.
This comes from Abdul Padilla. If you guys could create a unique specialized trigger, what kind of trigger would you create? I suppose some kind of I win trigger is a valid answer, but that would be boring. Oh, there goes my answer. I think that we haven't really seen enough of what triggers can do in order to really effectively answer that, because I think of triggers and I think sword,
guns.
Gun. One sword had ribbons, but then we were also introduced to, like, Anadora's trigger was like turn your whole body into like shadow Trion mass thing. So,
and we also got a brief glimpse of Renji, I think it was. Renji had, like, a Gatling gun trigger, and he had a trigger that brought up a shield, like a big barricade, essentially. So there are specialized ones. They mentioned Tamakoma has them that would be interesting, but it is something that we haven't really gotten as much info about it, I guess, to really create our own without, I don't know, maybe just devolving into, like, wacky...
It's hard to get an idea of the limit, and thus to...
Yeah, I'm almost like, well, I'll make a trigger that's a stand, and it, when I punch people, it makes them old and young, and I call it baby metal.
Second question. Hypothetically, if Marvel or DC was to borrow a villain from One Piece to star as the antagonist for one of their films, what hero or team of heroes would you match up against? Which villain or team of villains? Oh, God.
What character will we put up against what villain from One Piece? What Marvel character, Marvel or DC, go against what One Piece character in the movie?
I think I like Crocodile as the antagonist in the Batman movie because his dynamic is a villain who pretends to be a hero, matches well with Batman, a hero with a villain says to him. And also, Crocodile is basically a crime boss, so
yeah,
I like that idea. One Piece villain, Marvel or DC hero. Jeez.
I mean, it's tough because I'm like, he almost seems like a lot of One Piece characters seem almost too strong for a lot of, like, the characters we know outside of Superman, and I don't...
They don't want to have Superman do it.
I mean, maybe, like, he's not a villain. But I'm like, I guess Whitebeard versus Superman might be mildly interesting just for a lot of shit-breaking, but I don't know, like, I guess if you made, like, an Avengers movie, like, Doflamingo might be interesting. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, well, why don't we just get Fox to give us back the rights to Dr. Doom and have him instead?
I think the difficulty with answering this question is the fact that One Piece is, you know, they're incredibly powerful villains with small-scale goals. Because they're like, I'm going to rule, you know, this kingdom or rule this country or something like that. And villains that approach that scale of power get to the point where they're, like, world-threatening. So the dynamic between them doesn't match up as well. I mean, there are characters, don't get me wrong, in Marvel and DC that would kick the asses of these One Piece characters, but they tend to go up against, like, fucking galactic threats as well.
Let me, I'm trying to, like, I guess bring it down maybe a little. Let's take, because I'm trying to make it, like, a scale that would work, and, like, the fight might be interesting, and as opposed to necessarily the two would have, like, a opposed viewpoints. Maybe, like, Mr. One versus Captain America. Like, put Mr. One in a Captain America movie. Like, he's, like, their oddball, or whatever, odd job, where, like, he's not the main nemesis, but he's, like, you know, the bodyguard, and they have a cool fight, and then, like, the main guy behind him is a fucking goober.
Oh, yeah, but if you do that, then it's just like, well, he's just kind of a guy now, so.
Well, that's kind of what Mr. One was in One Piece anyway.
That's true, but then you're, like, wasting your opportunity to do something.
So. I know, but it's like, how do you, like, it's just, other than being, like, this person make a good Avengers movie villain, I guess. That or against Superman. I guess Superman and the DC pantheon have bigger characters that could stand up against One Piece characters more. Because, like, my first thought would be, like, oh, Blackbeard would be awesome. I'm like, how do you beat Blackbeard? He's essentially like a black hole. I mean, eventually someone will beat him in One Piece, but he's ridiculously powerful in that he can nullify attacks. You know? I mean, I guess DC has Superman, Wonder Woman, Shazam. Like, those characters are just, like, big fucking huge bruisers, but...
Oh, God. Hey, dogs.
I'm gonna put Nick's dog in One Piece, and it gets to fight against Captain America for some reason.
Okay. Next up. If Hiro Mashima were to decide that Fairy Tail was bad and decide to salvage it and make it legitimately good, do you think he could do so? I ask this question because I don't believe Hiro is a bad writer despite Fairy Tail's failings. He has done good work with Rave Master. His main problem is laziness. I'm not sure if it is possible for Fairy Tail to recover after being basically a fan service manga for so long, but maybe with some effort, it could be decent. I absolutely agree. And I think that the flashes of potential that we've seen from Fairy Tail here and there prove that Hiro is capable of doing much better than he has.
Yes. And there was
all it would take would be for him to decide, you know what, this isn't good enough, I'm going to try harder.
And again, I still really like Rave Master. At least, you know, I did at the time. I haven't read it in a while, but he, you know, proved for me that he could, you know, for the most part, write pretty well. So I feel he could if he did get his stuff together. And maybe this last arc, since he doesn't have to build up anything else, and he can just lay it all out on the table, essentially, here. Maybe this will be his best arc.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question here. Are we going to make this maybe the last one, or maybe one or two more?
Yeah, let's do a couple more. Cause, I mean, I would have liked for us to get all the way through the questions sent to us in August, but we are going kind of long now. So.
Yeah. This is a question here from Siggy. He says, well, we all know Oda doesn't kill off his characters. If there had to be a death among the Straw Hats, who would you want it to be and why? That's tough to me, because I'm like, I don't
Robin.
Like any of them. No, and I wouldn't say Robin. I don't know if I'd want one. He says, whether it's because you think their death would make for a good story, or because you like one Straw Hat less, you feel like losing them wouldn't hurt the story too much.
Well, the question is, if there has to be a death among them, who would
it be? Yeah, I think it should be, if there has to be a death, who should it be? As opposed to who would I want it to be. Who should would be probably Frankie.
He's got the least, like, really plot-relevant stuff going on.
Well, his dream can be accomplished posthumously. He dreams of a ship that can reach the end of the world. So he's built that ship, and it could presumably reach the end of the world, even despite his death. He's also technically the second oldest character, though I consider him the oldest, because I just don't count Brook, because he's, like, 50 years of fucking nothing.
He cheats.
Yeah. I'm like, in that regard, Frankie's like an older character. He's experienced everything in the world. You know, I feel like if you had to kill one off, also it would be like a dramatic thing of like, oh, you know, such a bright life in the Straw Hats has been extinguished. But I don't want to really consider it that much. If I had to pick one or who I think it should be, I'd probably think Frankie'd be the big choice.
I think that I agree with your idea there. Everyone else has stuff where it's like, yeah, they have to accomplish this goal. And a lot of them are goals that are really super important, like Robin's. So
translate world history, right. You know.
And, you know, Brooke's got to be reunited with Laboon and stuff. So, all right. Next up, we got a question from Jack Lebrano, long-time listener, first-time question asker, Since Trafalgar Law has his backstory filled in now, which supernova would you like to know about next? Personally, I wish to go for Basil, because I feel like he's an underrated pirate, and that voodoo fruit will be pretty fun to explore. What about you two? And I'll level with you, I'm not super familiar with the supernovas, so I will just pass on this question.
I would agree at Hawkins. Hawkins, I think, is the most interesting supernova to me, because I do like his design. I love the voodoo fruit. Seems like a really cool thing. The other ones, I mean, they're really cool, and I'd like to get their stuff. I guess Basil would be the one I like most, though, so I guess I'd want to see his stuff next. Outside of him, it'd be Kid, just because he's the most significant one.
God! Shut up! Sorry. Not you, the dog.
I'm like, Nick, I'm sorry! I'll change it! It's Capone, Nick! I want Capone to get the story next!
Oh, God.
He has an army fruit, Nick. It's pretty crazy. Russell Fresnan.
Alright. This question actually kind of bothers me.
it is strange.
Does the relationship between Boa, meaning Boa Hancock, and Luffy ever bother you, since the woman's old enough to be his mom? Luffy was 17 pre-time skip, Hancock was 29 pre-time skip.
I'm like, she's not.
How old do you think mothers are when their kids are born?
I mean, yes, there have been cases of 11-year-olds who get pregnant. It's not that common, though, to be like a faux pas. Even then, like a essentially like a 10-year difference.
That's not
the worst thing in the world. I mean,
it was certainly weirder when Luffy was still, you know, 17. But even now when it's like 19, 31-year-old, I can sort of see that. You know,
yeah.
I think that does not bother me at all. Because they're... fucking hell.
Yeah, like, you know what bothers me is this fucking dog!
So, there. The only things that I think about Hancock's fucking dog. I can't even fucking think right now. I fucking hate fucking smelly, shitting, eat their own shit dogs so goddamn much right now. So angry. You know what? I'm gonna change an answer to a question that was asked before. If you could write a manga, what would it be? Dog killing manga.
Oh my god! It got so dark. And you walk around with a butcher knife stabbing people's dogs. You're like, it's for the kids. And fucking Mr. Jump's like, yarr, this is so depressing. This won't say it in this magazine. And he's got like a single solitary tear rolling down his face. You killed so many dogs there, Maddie.
Yarr.
Yarr.
Oh, God. All that noise would be worth it for that. Anyway, Hancock and Luffy. it does not bother me, especially because it's portrayed in a comedic light where, like, she's just... At first, where it's just like, oh, will you marry me? Just like, meh, what? And then eventually it gets worse. It's like, no, I'm not going to marry you. Leave me alone. it's something where I don't think it's ever going to happen because it is so played for humor. And it was basically done so that Hancock would become Luffy's ally, which is kind of unfortunate when you think about it, that was like, how do you deal with this super powerful woman? Well, she falls in love with the hero, obviously.
I always wish Hancock was a better designed character. For, like, the one female character at the time among the three superpowers, I mean, obviously now there's Big Mom, but the one female character was like, oh, and she has a love-based power. It's like when Princess Peach got her own video game, and it was like she was powered by emotions. She's just like, ooh.
I mean, the whole thing where it was just like, whoever thinks these, she's super beautiful or whatever is, you know, is falls prone to prey to her power, and Luffy's such an ignorant dumbass that of course he doesn't think that about her. That I could get behind. But then she falls in love with him, and it's just like, I don't know. It's good for a laugh every now and then, but it was incredibly convenient that was how he gained a tremendous ally. Yeah.
And to the question itself, the only reason that would be disturbing is if Luffy was younger even than 17.
Yeah,
if he was like 15 and she was like,
yeah, even
know,
that
27, be... you're like, that's a little bit weird. It would essentially be like the scenario I brought up a little bit ago, where I'm like, hey, Chitoge, want to come stay a week at my house?
Right. I mean, it's at the point where he is, you know, basically almost at sexual maturity, and she's, you know, significantly older than him, but not absurdly so. There are like arranged marriages that have a bigger age difference than that, so. I mean, if the genders were reversed, I've seen creepier examples of that in manga.
Yeah, so. It's not like that fucking Josh Hutcherson or whatever his name was from Lost. They always credit him as being from Lost, even though he played like a 2-episode minor character. But the dude was like 50 years older than his fucking like 16 or like 19-year-old fucking girlfriend.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And this is a long one. My biggest nitpick. The main problem I always had with the Dressrosa arc was that Doflamingo never seemed to be using his powers to his full advantage, mainly when he activated his birdcage technique. And from what I gathered from it, the birdcage is supposed to have everyone kill each other because there are parasite strings forcing them to do it. My question is, why did he never bother using those strings to influence any of the members of Luffy's crew or his allies? All the excuses I got from fans are because of Haki or Luffy moves too fast. But what if that were the case? Then how did Doflamingo take over the Vice Admiral so easily when we were first introduced to him? I feel like Oda missed an opportunity to challenge the Straw Hats by either taking over Luffy or just taking over weaker members of his crew like Usopp or Bartolomeo. Like, he didn't need to reveal his awakened abilities if Doflamingo could just have it. Okay. Basically, why did he waste the potential of the string string food? Or am I expecting too much? I think that the thing there is that Doflamingo likes to portray himself as a super awesome puppet master. But when you think about it, he's just an emotional kid. So he got pissed off at Luffy and he wanted to kill him, as opposed to control him or whatever.
Well, he did try to control him at one point, I thought, but Luffy basically wasn't able to like connect into him because of Haki.
Right.
As to why...
And because he's made of rubber or yeah. something like that.
And that in the larger scale of one of the arc... For a lot of it, he was the guy sitting back in his castle letting his minions go about it. And then when he did kind of get involved, I always just assumed that using the parasite string kind of requires a bit of concentration because you're now actively pulling somebody else as opposed to, like, you know, the strings themselves. Now he actually has to literally be a puppet master and have some kind of cognitive awareness of it. So I always assumed that when he's actively fighting someone else, it's just not a technique he can use against the surrounding area because it's just, like... He couldn't control fucking, like, Zoro all the way across town because he's just not cognitively aware of what's happening. It would just be too much of a nuisance to, like, mentally manage that while staying, you know, aware in a fight. That's my kind of, like, how I considered it at the time.
I think it's a legit question when you have a character that can literally control another person's actions and they don't use that ability all the fucking time. So, fair enough.
Yeah. I don't think necessarily the fruit was underused, though. I feel like he got a lot out of it.
He did do a shit ton.
Yeah.
I think maybe we'll make this the last one.
Yes. All right. So this is from the Bilby guy. He says, Shonen Battle Manga will never have a final battle in their conclusion. A lot of people guess that Naruto would be Naruto versus Sasuke. My question is, what do you currently believe will be the final battle of One Piece? Who do you think will be involved? Do you suspect it'll be a different faction? What do you think it's going to be? Final battle of One Piece.
Well, the suggestions they name are like Luffy and Blackbeard, Luffy and Shanks, the Navy, or whatever.
Ikanu.
Yeah. I am fairly certain at this point it's going to feature Luffy versus Blackbeard. That just seems to be the thing that is being teased as, you know, Blackbeard is being built up. He's gathering more power. He's ascending through the ranks of infamy and so on and so forth. And he has been, you know, portrayed as Luffy's dark reflection in a way. And also, he's Blackbeard. I mean, what more famous pirate is there? So I think it's got to be him.
Yeah. To that regard, back in the day, way before we got to this point in One Piece, I was considering, like, I debated, like, what the final battle of One Piece would be. And at the time, the scenarios, I thought, like, what would be the final fight? And I was like, you know, what, Luffy versus Shanks was an obvious one. Like, you know, the mentor finally going against his student at the end. Luffy versus Kobe was one I considered. You know, a pirate who gets his start at the very beginning and a marine who gets his start at the very beginning who are, like, friend rivals. Luffy versus Whitebeard, because at the time, Whitebeard hadn't really been involved in the story, just he was the strongest man in the world. Blackbeard was in there. But I think at this point, it seems pretty clear that Blackbeard's probably going to end up being his final antagonist, if only for the juxtaposition between the fact they're both dreamers, but they have wildly different ways of going about it. The fact that Blackbeard's almost seemingly built a crew meant to mirror Luffy's in terms of like size and a lot of member personalities. You know, the fact that he has taken Whitebeard's fruit, that he's hunting devil fruit users, that he's created himself as basically one of the largest threats in the world, that anytime Luffy sees him, he gets angry. Like, it's just a guy who's basically built up to be a final antagonist. I think Akanu will be in there as well. The fact that he killed Ace is not something that Luffy is going to forget. They're going to have some showdown at some point. And I do think there'll eventually be some kind of fight between Luffy and Kobe, but I feel like our final major antagonist of One Piece will be Blackbeard. There may be a fight after that, maybe even Luffy versus Zoro, something like that, something wacky, but Blackbeard's going to be, I imagine, a final antagonist. Unless he fucking pulls a Naruto and like, oh, and the demon Kaguya shows up and she sends you to an acid realm for a brief second and she lets you out.
Oh, good. During the middle of the Q&A session, so Brawla sent us information that in a fan information book, Kira's told us... I've ranted about, oh, external material says this, fuck off.
What was it? Maybe it was like a...
It was sent specifically to me, which was, in the Bleach fan book, 13 Blades, it was confirmed that Kira Zuru is still alive. Well, good for him.
Well, I mean, who cares? Who really cares if Kira's still alive? It's like, come on. Is it going to matter? Has the story changed that he's alive or not? Like, you could honestly kill basically every vice captain at this point, and it's really not going to leave that big of an impact on the series. I assume most of them are dead already.
A lot of them are.
Yeah. So, there we go. This was a long episode. We did get through a very healthy chunk of questions. We still have quite a few left. But, I think we had a good one here.
Yeah, I enjoy myself, and we had some nice laughs.
Stay tuned for Nick's dog killing manga.
Yeah, it's
2016.
I will have updates on that in the future, I think.
Yeah, Nick's like, I found an artist. He is known for his works. He also drew a Charles Manson comic, so I feel like we got a good synergy on that. And yeah, we're really gonna take this to the next level.
Oh, yeah.
I call it Pooch Death. The dog killing manga.
Or Death to Poochie or some shit like that.
I'm trying to think of like a great pun of murder and dog.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of one too.
Dog aside, that's not that good.
Nah.
Oh, would you kill even like parody dogs though? Would you kill Doge?
That's not real. I don't mind fake dogs or cutesy cartoon dogs.
Are you going to try to kill Scotia?
The thing is, I'm actually, like, I don't know.
I am a little
bit... Let me put it this way. I'm far more enthusiastic about actually killing fake dogs than I am real dogs. But if it's just a manga, then they're all fake dogs, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this right now, Nick. I am a little bit concerned that you brought up the idea of a dog-killing manga, and we have not heard from your dog since then.
Use my psychic powers, man.
I'm like, did Nick just step away for a quick moment, break his dog neck, and just come back to the computer like, no, everything's
actually,
fine.
Actually, speaking of which, I have to go right now.
it's like how Chris Benoit murdered his family, and then for like another day, he was still just hanging about his house. You're like, oh, this is so morbid. Nick finished the podcast after killing his dog?
I had business to take care of, obviously. I could just, yeah. I knew I could. The body would still be there. I'd bury it later.
Ironically, you also cheated. Tweeted Chavo Guerrero asking him to let the dogs out.
Oh, God.
So ironic, considering you murdered them. Also,
okay,
I don't know
we've done Chris Benoit jokes. It's time to stop now.
Goodbye, everybody.